Ladies and some gentlemen, welcome back to Ladies with Gumption, episode 31, Taking Out the Trash. I am your introductress, Tatiana, and I am here with
Jessica
and May.
This is Side A, Legends of Tomorrow and Black Lightning, Bebo Voltron / Legs for Loyalty.
So, before we get into Side A, we have to tell you how to reach us, so that you'll give us more feedback, which you guys did do this week, and it was awesome. Thank you. We got lots of emails and even a DM or two. So, yay. All right. You can find us at DCTVGumption on Twitter, or you can email us at ladieswgumption@gmail.com. And if you sent in an iTunes review, either we didn't check it or it didn't arrive. So.
That's in the mail.
We are on Ladies with Gumption on iTunes and Google Play. Finally, you can send us individual asks on Tumblr. I am Valerie M. Perez. May is her own hero writer. And Jessica is falling in love in a flash. Soon to be changed if Ralph stays on the show. Anyway, first, we've got some feedback up from the lovely Kendall, who sent us an email. And Kendall appreciates our candor when it comes to certain behind-the-scenes stories that we cover, because other podcast hosts sometimes seem scared of saying controversial things, like one time a host regretted admitting that she didn't like Caitlin, which if she had admitted she didn't like Iris, I would understand her fear. But, you know, anyway, it sometimes makes her feel like she's alone in her feelings when it comes to the show. So I'm glad that we can make her feel less alone. Snaps for Ken.
Snaps for Kendall. I mean, I feel like because all of the main entertainment influencers out there are primarily white and they all have like the same wash, rinse, repeat opinions, it just skews the whole conversation and fandom so that some characters, and it's usually the POC characters, whether they're male or female, become like the punching bags for criticism. While primarily white characters become untouchable, you know, they're like Teflon. Nothing sticks on them because everyone defends them, you know, for random stuff. So I think, like, people should be allowed to say if they don't like something as long as they're being objective about it, meaning that their dislike isn't rooted in any of the isms. So I don't like Iris. Let me tell you all the racist and sexist reasons why. No, that's not going to fly. But, I mean, like, you should be able to be... If you can be objective, I think that it's fine. And I also think that people shouldn't feel like they can't talk about a certain character or like a certain character because fandom decided that they didn't like that character. So, you know, if you are a fan of Caitlin, for example, then I don't think you should be afraid to speak to us about it or feel like we wouldn't want to make you feel bad about it, because that's the reason why we created the podcast in the first place, because we felt isolated like that. So we definitely wouldn't want to do that to anyone else.
Oh, for sure. It's not love of a character that is ever a problem. You can love whoever you want, right? It's when you hate certain characters in specific ways that so many of the audience does.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that you should be able to dislike a character so long as the reason they're valid and isn't just, I hate her because she exists. Like, my only issue is that some criticisms usually aren't as objective for some people in fandom and in media, and they can be rooted in the unconscious isms, but I think that's one of the many reasons why the superhero genre needs more inclusive voices, and that's why we're here.
Yay!
Speaking of reasons that we're here, and that we've somewhat alluded to, we want to be inclusive of all DCTV ladies. So, like we said, it's cool if you like Caitlin. You know, like when we pointed out last week some issues that we had with her behind the scenes in season one, that doesn't mean that, like, we hate her and or that she's the only person that we're going to talk shit about. We are trying to be honest and fair in our criticism. So we don't spread rumors, but we do talk about things that we see, one of which may have happened this last weekend at Plexicon. Does anyone like to talk about that?
I don't have the full story yet. So. Someone else has to talk about it.
Well, I mean, okay. So, I didn't see the video where it happened, but there's plenty of talk about it online with Katie Lotz. And a comment that she had made, and she wound up using a slur for the lesbian community. And a lot of people were not happy about it, and there are also a lot of people defending her, which she said it, and apparently it was a reference to some email or some review.
It was like a review or a commenter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so she was like repeating that, and it was, never mind. Hold on. Let me pause.
Gather your thoughts.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like with her, it's that, and this pertains to anybody who says certain things, that you could, maybe she, I don't know if she uses it jokingly amongst her friends. I'm not sure what goes on in her personal life, but on a public platform, I think that she should be more aware of how things are said and what terms she uses, because they are considered offensive to communities, you know? So it's just about educating oneself in what is okay to say, especially if you are not a part of that community yourself and you're just playing a character who happens to be, you know?
Right. I think that was the thing, because, like, if it, and the fact that you don't know if it's something that she's in her personal life, it's kind of hard, because, like, I like her and I feel like she is a good person and, like, a really good advocate for the LGBT community, but at the same time, you know, she's, and she did speak out about it. Like, she said that she didn't know that it was offensive, which, if I'm being very generous, you know, then I'll give her that. But at the same time, like, if someone is saying, like, the N-word, and I don't care if you are, you know, if someone allowed you to say it in your little friend group or whatever, if you say the N-word, and to me, I'm going to be like, fuck you, why did you say that? It's not, you know, that's offensive. So just because you might like somebody, if they say something offensive and then they don't own up to it or they try to defend it, then, you know, that's an issue. And she didn't, to her, from what I saw, that she didn't like people that were defending her for using it. She said that she didn't know. And she also told people, like, I don't see the tweets coming to me as hate. You know, so she did good damage control on it, and I just hope it never happens again. So
right, I thought she could have like literally apologized, because she didn't actually say I'm sorry in her statement or tweet, if you will, but she did say thank you for educating me or whatever. You know, like, oh, thanks for letting me know. All right, so it was fine. Beyond that, she did say the slur, which she explained as having been quoting that one fan. But there was also, like, a little bit of concern, because she was, like, making a joke with Maisie about how Maisie, you know, won't get to play a lesbian character because she's too girly. And Maisie did turn that around into a whole speech about stereotypes and how she is stereotyped as an actress, right? And that hopefully one day she'll be gay enough. But, so that's another thing, too, that it makes it feel like it's just something that it's like one way when you're joking with your friends, and I'm sure Maisie understands that and has that banter with her. And it's another thing when you're in front of a lot of people who aren't necessarily going to take it the same way that you're
right. That I feel like there's probably some kind of conversations that they've had in private, mm-hmm. joking around with each other, and it came out on stage, and, you know, of course the fans don't know that kind of relationship, so it just came off. That, in addition to the slur from earlier, just made the whole situation come off probably different than what she saw going on in her head.
Right. Did not go the way it was intended.
Yeah, I mean, people joke, but then it comes off as being insensitive or offensive, and you just have to scale it back a little bit. But at mm-hmm. least she became aware that people were upset about it.
Yes, she acknowledged it, and hopefully it will not be repeated. So, great. Moving on to other news. Happier news, maybe? Colton Haynes is returning to Arrow as a series regular in season 7. Ooh. So, I say this, right. I was going to say, it's like happy because you're like, oh, yay, I love Roy. But you're like, no, I love Roy because of Thea, and Thea's not fucking there. What does that fucking mean? So now I'm very concerned.
Right, like, did she ride off into the sunset on her own? Why is he coming back?
He better be like, oh, Thea's on a mission right now, so I'll hang out with you guys for a little bit. You know?
Yeah. Nyssa seduced her, so now it's and Roy's by himself.
That would be okay, too. As long as he didn't dump her or she didn't die. Those are really just the two things that I cannot, they're not acceptable. Anyway, a girl named Victoria Askunis, that I don't think that we know anything about, has been cast to play a younger version of Caitlin on The Flash. So we're going to have a flashback scene for her.
Or it's hallucination, so like young Caitlin and Killer Frost are talking to each other or whatever. Because, yeah, like, what's going on, like, inside her head? Because, like, how are these two separate people coexisting, like, in her brain? So it could be, like, Killer Frost, like, talking to Caitlin as Caitlin is, like, on the death's doornail. No, that didn't make any sense.
Death's door.
Death's doorstep.
Dennis Gordon on Death's
doorstep. I got you.
That could be
Yeah, I actually really like that. And because we haven't heard that the actress that plays her mother is coming back, she might, and we just don't know about it. Because a flashback you think would have her mom in it, or her dad or something.
Yes.
So, a hallucination would be really cool.
Maybe as the hallucination, if it is in her mind, then, like, that piece, that child is the thing that pieces the two personalities together. I guess we'll see.
Oh, wow. There's a lot going on there. All right.
I mean, you know, it's the writers, so I doubt they're going to be that creative with it, but we'll see.
Also, Maisie Richardson Sellers has been confirmed. I mean, we were going to talk about this when we talk about Legends, but just for you guys know, she is a series regular in Legends Season 4. So, Amaya has left, but she's not gone. Finally, we learned that David Ramsey is appearing in an upcoming episode of The Flash. It sounds like it's episode 22. So that's really exciting, and it reminds me of 322, because that's when Lila showed up, and she was Argus, and right now, Diggle's Argus. So I like it, and I can't wait. Now, are we going to talk about those Titans set pictures and reactions to those Titans set pictures?
Yeah, I think we need to. I'll tell you right now, I was upset. Like, objectively, I did not like the way that they chose to style Anna, who plays Starfire. And I don't like that it was the first time that we saw her in costume. Because when I first saw it, I was like, she's got to be undercover for something. But the fact that this is the first time we're seeing her, you know, fandom, and not even a concept picture of what she's supposed to be looking like regularly. In her costume. So fandom is already, like, going over the edge and using it as, like, a cover for their actual rooted racist reasons why they don't want her to be Starfire. And that, like, I can't even be mad about the costume anymore because people are just being just so ugly about it. And I feel like, and Anna responded beautifully on her Instagram to the criticism, and she did confirm that she is wearing this for a specific reason. It's not what her character normally looks like, that the picture, whoever took it, it was a sloppy picture in the first place. And there are some other pictures of her in the same outfit, and I think she's with Britton, who plays Nightwing, where she looks, they're much more flattering pictures of her, but this one picture was just not flattering, and then you have the styling, and then you have people being racist about it, and it's kind of like, you know, for Black female characters especially, you already started like a fandom deficit, because like the Black proverb, you have to work twice as hard, is in play in fandom as well. And so she's already at, like, a fandom deficit just being cast. And then this is the first picture you see, and you've got all these people that are just, like, really going in on her. And so I hate that she had to respond to it, because that means that she had to see it. But I like that she was so eloquent in her response.
I totally agree that she was super eloquent. And I loved what she said, but I hated that she had to say it. Right. And it was also so obvious because all of them look bad, you know? Like, I mean, I guess Nightwing looked normal because he's normal.
Yeah, right? He looks most normal, but Beast Boy also had some weird stuff going on. And
the hair, and both of their hairs looked bad, you know? So, like, I mean, Beast Boy's hair didn't look good, and neither did Raven's. Like, you know, you couldn't really see what was going on. They're, like, in coats, whatever.
Yeah. But she got the brunt of it. Like,
exactly. And she got, like, the ones that are, like, directly attacking her, like, calling her a hooker, and, like, all this nonsense that is just obviously rooted in racism. So, don't be like that, guys. Because we can tell what you're really saying. And this was more obvious than most.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. And what was frustrating is that the show, the PR people for the show didn't even release, they should have released a picture of her prior to this, since she was already shooting scenes. But we got Robin, and we got Dove, and Hawk, or whatever their names are. And then they should have released one of her, because she's probably, like, one of the most popular characters, you know? And I feel like they did that, they did a disservice. But what was even more irritating was, like, the long Twitter threads I saw about what she looked like specifically. And that was disheartening.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, they should have released a photo after it. Like, if they have a photo, that would be good damage control to show what she's actually going to look like. Because then you have, I mean, and then you have those people that are like, oh, but no matter what, she's not going to look like Starfire. So this is just further proof, even though I already knew that. And it was like, all right, well, then you don't care what she looks like, do you? You just care that she's black. Fandom continues to suck, and we will continue to fight it. Finally, it is time to begin our recaps and reviews. So we will start with Legends Tomorrow and Black Lightning on Side A, and then Mini Krypton with Flash and Arrow on Side B. We'll talk about what we like, what we don't like, what we predict, unless you're Legends of Tomorrow, and finally nominate our Lady with Gumption of the Week. So, May, can you do the honors?
Yes. So, drum roll. You can't even hear that. That's pointless. Legends of Tomorrow, Mollis, whose real name is Malice, thank you very much, they've been mispronouncing it, is eager and ready for a fight. The Legends hightail it back to the Wave Rider and try to formulate a plan, but Rip is way ahead of them. Removing one of the time drives from the ship, the old captain plans to use it to blast Mollis away so that the Legends can get to safety. It isn't a plan that will kill Mollis permanently, but Sarah does realize that Rip won't survive the time drive's blast, and, well, R.I.P. Rip, it was nice knowing you. The Legends mourn Rip for about 30 seconds before they're stuck trying to get away from him. Where can they go? To the Wild West, of course, a temporal blind spot perfect for hiding away. Jonah Hex greets them and forms an unexpected connection with Zari, maybe a love connection. Nate joins Amaya in a trip to the ancestral plane where he takes too big of a drink and becomes high as a kite. Amaya realizes that the totems must be used together and joined by the people wielding them in order to create a being of light that will be used to destroy Mollis once and for all. Over at the saloon, Mollis ends up finding the Legends and sends Blackbeard, Caesar, and Freydis to apprehend them. Obviously, they want the totems and give them until high noon the next day to hand them over. Sarah thinks they're in way over their heads, and instead of defeating Mollis, she thinks that they should hand over the totems to new people who are worthy. Amaya relays the information to the team about defeating Mollis, and then Ava arrives with the cavalry, which includes Jax, Helen of Troy, now Helen of Themyscira, and Kuwasa to help support the Legends in their Mollis takedown. Ava tells Sarah that they're only here to help, and that it's the Legends who must bear the totems to defeat Mollis. Reluctantly, Sarah wields the Death Totem once more, and she, along with Amaya, Mick, Zari, Nate, and Wally, assemble, think deep thoughts, and fail to do what needs to be done. For them, second time is the charm, and together they finally create Voltron Bebo to fight Mollis, and it is epic. Meanwhile, Ray is left behind on the ship, and Sarah instructs him not to do anything stupid, but of course Ray does, and so he tells Damien Dark that there is still a way to save Nora's life. So they travel to the time right before she died and was taken over by Mollis. They rescue her, but it's Damien who ends up taking her place. In the end, everyone Ava brought along goes back to their homes and times. Amaya says goodbye to the team and is dropped off in Zambezi 1942, and the rest of the team head to Aruba. While there, they're visited by Gary, who's dressed up as Constantine, and Constantine himself to inform the Legend that, of course, time is broken again, more so than before, and now they have to battle time demons they've unintentionally unleashed. And that is what you miss on the season finale of Legends of Tomorrow. Ladies.
Beautiful.
What did we think of this episode? What did we like?
Okay, I guess I'll talk first. All right. There was a lot to like. It was an extremely fun finale. I really loved, especially loved Ray and Damien teaming up to rescue Nora. It was one of my favorite storylines, mostly because it was a nice culmination of both of their stories for the season. Like, we spent a lot of time with Damien this season, and it's also the first time that he's been of any interest. So to see him finally move from just, like, a selfish garbage monster that just wants to destroy the world for his own gain to someone who acts selflessly, but still, even it's still like for his daughter, right? He's not helping anyone else. He's going to die for Nora, because otherwise, like, what's the point of having everything if you have no one to give it to? So it made total sense for his character. It showed growth for him as a father without changing who he fundamentally is as a person. And I loved that. Also, Ray, just being, you know, like, Ray is just such a sweet bean. He wants to save everyone. And you can, you know, you can say that he likes Nora as more than that. They made a lot of jokes about that possibility, even though he denied it every time. Or you could just say that he really, you know, is just a good person who believes the best in everybody. But either way, it worked really well for this storyline. They were a lot of fun together. And the moment where Damien saves Nora was really emotional. I especially loved Ray giving her that time stone at the end, because, you know, now she can start over. And it goes along with, like, legends. You know, legends are always breaking the rules for what they think is not even the greater good, right? Just the specific good of that moment. So, yeah. And so he wanted her to have a good life, because she'd been denied that since she was a child, right? She's been, like, a, you know, bred to hold Malice. So now it's Malice. So now it's time
Malice.
Now it's time to find out what her life would actually be like. And that gives us a chance to see her next season and see where we want to go, if that is going to be a ship or not. All right. Other things, because that wasn't the only storyline in the episode. I loved the hodgepodge of previous characters that showed up, both as villains under Malice's control, as well as friends responding to Zari's beacon. Because, you know, it made the season feel like it was tied together, which did not feel that way throughout a lot of the season, right? We were sitting there wondering, like, when is this going to, like, be part of the plot? Like, I don't get it. And now they made it happen, right? All the bad guys from before are under Malice's control, and then all the good guys show up because the legends are really friendly and they make people love them even when they fuck everything up. Even the addition of Jonah Hex felt perfectly natural, and the flirtation between him and Zari was totally unnecessary but adorable. So it didn't like overshadow anything. I did enjoy like their little moments. I wouldn't care if she never saw him again, but for now, it's nice to know that Zari is appreciated, right? So yes, I agree with you, Jonah. Maya and Nate figuring out they have to Care Bear stare in order to create their Voltron warrior was a lot of fun. You know, I love that Nate's apparent addiction, right, like need to be high all the time, is actually serving a useful purpose. And of course, how could I not love that when it finally worked, it was fucking Bebo. Like, this explains why they haven't gone anywhere for like 6 episodes, and why Amaya and Zari had like some horrible wig situation going on for a couple episodes, because they had to save all their money for Bebo, and it was beautiful. Thank you, Bebo. Yeah, the whole fight and like everyone's reactions to the fight, and then how it literally ends in like a blue heart. It did feel very appropriate for Legends. Ava and Sarah making up, you know, that was very sweet. I loved Ava rescuing her on the horse, and that then she was like, "This is my first time. I've never ridden a horse before, or whatever." And I was like, "Well, yeah, you were sort of engineered to be perfect, so good job." but yeah, I really did enjoy that. And I liked Jack's appearing, even though, you know, I don't know that I like Fran's appearing, but Jack's appearing was great. Love learning that he had a wife. Right.
Yeah, that is called accountable.
But yes, I did love the little bit that he's got a wife and a daughter. He's a different man now. He's got he's found his own journey, whatever that is. We'll never find out, but he's figured it out. And Helen getting to be an Amazon, such a great payoff, right? And actually can just see how she fights as an Amazon. And how confident and strong she is now. Love it. Love Helen. She's awesome. I also was glad that we were finally right that Wally was a totem bearer. Yes! Even though it was just a call of Bebo. It finally happened. And I liked it a lot because of the notion that they were all brought together on purpose, right? It was meant to be. It was always supposed to be Wally holding the water totem. Was it the water totem that he did?
Water totem. Because Ray wasn't there.
Right. So I love that. And then finally, thank goodness that Amaya did not erase her own memory. Because that would have felt like a total waste. And that Gary showed up as Constantine's plus one. Dressed like Constantine, also, for some reason. That was a cute little final bit. And a great way to introduce our storyline for next season.
you really did not like this episode. What happened?
I'd just like to take a moment to thank Ray Palmer for going off on his own so that Wally can be a totem bearer. That's all.
Right.
Yes. Thank you for your sacrifice, Ray.
Although it was really weird that suddenly, like, the water totem wasn't working for him the last episode, and, like, at the beginning of this episode, he's like, water! And it worked.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When did that happen?
I thought it for a second. I was like, wait a second. What?
Yeah. Anyway, I love seeing Helen of Troy return as Helen of Themyscira because I loved her in her episode, and I loved how much more confident and, you know, that she was, and it was just, like, badass seeing her, like, kick everybody's ass. And I like that because Amaya saved her village, Kuwasa got to come back as Vixen, and that Ava kind of, like, rounded them all up and brought them back. I don't really understand why Kuwasa has to share the totem with Mari, but, you know, because she's the oldest, so it just should be her totem. But anyway,
sister,
I guess, like...
Sister share, okay, Jessica?
No, not Aaron. No, they don't. Not Aaron. We're not, like, sister queens. There's one queen. But anyway, but I mean, I guess, like, you know, you have to keep, like, the continuity in DC intact, so, you know, they share the totem, but, okay. The return of High Nate was good, because High Nate is, like, the best Nate, usually, so I like seeing him go on that journey with Amaya. I like the Rey and Damien subplot as well, and I thought, like Tatiana said, I thought it was a good way to close out that story, especially for Damien, because... One, he was supposed to be dead anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still an anachronism that they needed to fix. And then, two, it gives Nora the second chance that she never had. And I thought that was really great for her. Like you said, like she's been bred, had her whole life revolve around being the demon incubator. So it was good that she gets to be a second chance to, like, be, you know, a normal person. And I feel like all of, like, the suggestive stuff between her and Rey was just because the actors are married in real life, so they're just kind of poking fun at it. But hopefully, I don't need that to be a ship, so I hope they just stay friends. And then Jonah Hex and Zari had me, like, raising my eyebrows a few times, like, oh, okay. and I thought they were cute, but I still feel like Amari, Zari, and Amaya should be a thing, so. You know, Jonah.
It's what we deserve.
It is what we deserve. And I like that her thinking music is like heavy metal because it just seems so Zari, and it's I like those little touches of personality for the character. So I thought it was really appropriate that it was heavy metal music for her. And I liked, speaking of Amari, I liked the ending of when Amaya sang her goodbyes, and it's like Amari and a little side of Sarah, and they're all talking about like where their season started and how they joined the team and then where they are at the end. I thought it was a really sweet moment between the three ladies. I love Wally. I thought he was super cute in this episode and how he was more excited about the fashion in the Wild Wild West than the thought that they were actually like even in a more dire situation than they were before. I like that Ava insisted that Sarah and Legends needed to be the ones to use the totem and that she brought support and not replacements. Because I feel like that was good for Sarah. Like, Sarah's trying to, like, run away and Ava, again, is, like, holding her responsible. Like, you can do this kind of thing. So I thought that was really good for their relationship and how they work together. And my Captain Planet prediction, it was totally a thing because all of their stones combined and they created, like, first was a gross gremlin baby, but then like Voltron Bebo was their Captain Planet and saved the day. So it was, and it was like the cutest, weirdest fight ever. And like I loved it a lot. So I thought it was a really fun way to end the season.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you guys said.
Yes.
About the
tell us more.
Saving the money to create Bebo. I just feel like Bebo should now be a doll because I just want him just to keep like a little plushie, you know? I also thoroughly enjoyed seeing a lot of the characters that appeared early in the season, like Helen, and I know Jess didn't like seeing him again, but Blackbeard was fun. And, like, Helen got to fight, and I think living in Themyscira really suits her because you can just tell, you know, how much better off she is just by the expressions on her face. And then seeing Kuasa come to help her grandma, and it's immediately noticeable the change in her as well because the village was saved, and that was really great to see. I like that Rey still wanted to help Damien save Nora, and I like that he finally did one selfless thing, and it was to save his daughter. Because we know that Damien is not a selfless person. He doesn't care about anybody else. And it tied up their arc in a way that made a lot of sense, but also left room for Nora to drop in next season, which is really nice because I think she was one of my favorite parts of the season. And I kind of like that they went to the Wild West, if only because it felt like the Legends home away from home after the Wave Rider. And I liked High Nate too, because just that little scene where he's like, they're like, don't think about it. He's like, it's too late. I've already thought about it. Right before
Bebo was created. That was amazing. Nate is good for something.
And I thought it was really sweet that he wanted to go with Amaya to the ancestral plane or whatever, even though in all reality, he's the one who's usually more affected by going in there. I like that Ava was back and that it was only to provide assistance because she knew exactly what the Legends needed and, more importantly, what Sarah needed. And she let them be heroes instead of trying to take over like she would have done at the beginning of the season. Character growth. I'm so proud of Ava. I was not expecting anything between Jonah and Zari, and I thought it was weird at first. And I also raised my eyebrows. I was like, is this a love connection? I guess it's kind of cute. I mean, I'm glad she got attention. I don't know. I thought her being embarrassed about the hat was sweet following Sarah and Amaya's teasing. And which brings me to the scene at the end, and I think Amaya, Sarah, and Zari really held the season together as characters for me, and I think that they showed the most progress. And so it was nice to see them have that scene at the end where they remember what they've been through. And Wally is a precious bean, and I'm so happy he got to be a totem bearer, which means our predictions worked. I'm so happy because people were yelling at me on Twitter that why should Wally be a totem bearer? And he was, so I feel good about that. Mick actually spoke words, and his Are We Making a Baby was really funny. And finally, I can't believe this show created a giant Voltron Bebo to battle Mollus. I died, came back to life, and died again. So this show is like so ridiculous, but it managed to pull it off. And it worked, whereas elsewhere it wouldn't have, and it was probably the show's most memorable scene. So praise Bebo. What did we dislike?
So it wasn't much that I disliked because it was so good and enjoyable, but Rip sacrificing himself to buy the Legends time really felt flat for me. Like, I was just like, okay, because we've barely seen him and he's just been shady and we have so many questions about him that were never really answered, and now he's just dead. Unless he comes back, and I don't really want him to come back. So, you know, stay dead, dude. Stay dead. So, yeah, his death did not move me.
So was that less or dislike?
No, I mean, I would have preferred to feel something for his death, you know? And while it, like, you know, the way that they sort of, like, accepted it, they were like, oh, I'm kind of sad about this, moving on, was sort of like, you know, how I felt. Like, I was like, all right, let's move on now. Like, you know, y'all didn't really care about Rip. This is weird. So, yeah. So that part, I could have just done without. He could have just not come back at all and then not had to die. And, yeah, I love Jonah. I thought he was a lot of fun. But the Wild West backdrop was seemed just like it was just there so we could have Jonah when he could have just showed up with the rest of them, you know? So, yeah, it was just kind of like they didn't really use it, which, whatever, I guess it's fine. That's how most of the episodes have used their backdrops lately. So, it's just there. We didn't do anything with it. And then, I don't like that Amaya's going back to Zebaby, obviously. But, especially because I don't like that she's, like, sort of going to, like, ensure that Kuasa and Mari exist. Like, it's not even, like, I just love Aunt Zambezi so much, and I just really want to help my people there, and I have these specific goals that I want to achieve, you know? No, it's like, I just got to make sure that my grandchildren exist, so off I go. So it was a little anticlimactic. Like, obviously we knew she was going to do it, but the way that it happened was just like, all right, bye. And then literally seconds later, we find out that Maisie is coming back to fix season anyway. So, like, I didn't even have time to process what Amaya leaving means because she's not really going to be gone. which I guess, again, it's sort of like the Rip thing. Like, I'm glad she's coming back, but I don't like the way that you did it. It was just kind of like, eh. And then finally, I would have liked an I Love You Too for Ava Lance. Just saying. I'll be patient, but I felt like they could have done a little bit more of that reunion. All right, that's all.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, because I feel like there should have been a little bit more there, and it wasn't, but it's lukewarm enough that it has time to build next season, but, you know, you want, like, a little bit of something to keep you holding on.
But, exactly. Feed me over the hiatus.
Yeah. I did not like Jax, purely for non-show related reasons, because I saw a mess on Twitter before I saw the episode, so I just did not want to see Bronson's face.
Did you want to ask him how soon before he cheats on his wife? Since it must be so hard.
It's like, you know, I don't know, genetics, I guess, according to him. So it's bound to happen. I do wonder, like, what his wife, or his longtime girlfriend, or whatever, thought about that. Like, but, you know.
Yeah. Maybe she appreciates the effort he makes.
Maybe he's trying to defend himself in advance of what he could potentially do.
He pulls up to have this conversation. He's like, remember what I said on Twitter?
I told you this would happen.
Fake science right here. Anyway, back to the actual episode. R.I.P. Rip and his death. It was, I agree, it was underwhelming. And it's, like, the legends were, like, sad for, like, 30 seconds. And they're like, whoop. That's over. That's canceled. Let's move on to something that really matters. Kind of thing. It's kind of like, sorry for all, like, the two Rip fans in the left hand. And then, like, the other thing, I thought it was, I said this already, that I thought it was weird that Ray couldn't use Totem, and then all of a sudden he could use Totem in the finale, and then he left, and so all of a sudden Wally could use Totem, and it was like, is the water totem just, like, really, like, is the water totem a man? Because he was, like, cheating all of his words.
I was going to say, it's like water, right?
I guess so. To anybody, and it's okay. Like, all the other totems were, like, super picky, but water's like, I'll take anybody. but, I mean, like, there wasn't too much to dislike about this episode, so.
Yeah, I'm going to say Jax, too, for non-show-related reasons, but also, on the show, I liked seeing his character back, I guess, but I'm not sure exactly why he was there, since he's no longer a Firestorm, you know? So, I don't know.
Did he even fight?
You can't help us.
He didn't really fight. I just remember him being in the bar talking to Mick and talking about, you know, his wife and daughter, but that's about it, I think.
Yeah. Could have saved that. Whatever. Yeah.
Anyway. And Rip's death was, you know, it existed. I didn't expect it to happen so early on in the episode, and it kind of threw me off, because I was like, if he was going to die, and I felt like he was going to, I thought it would come at the end. And I completely agree, it was anticlimactic, and I was just like, the Legends, in that it took me about 10 seconds to get over it and then move on. Because you're right, we haven't seen him in a while. And I feel like it should have had more of an emotional resonance. But I guess Rip has slowly been written off the show for the entirety of the season. And this is just like the final, nail in the coffin. And yeah, that was insensitive. But sorry, Rip. And, you know, it was nice to know you for a limited time that you were on the show. But I did also think that I would feel differently after Amaya was dropped off in Zambezi and Nate walking away, telling himself not to look back. But I also, knowing that she'd be back next season, kind of took the emotion out of it. But it was short and sweet, though, and, you know, a nice way to end the Steel Vixen ship. But otherwise, it just didn't have that emotional resonance that it probably should have, because she's been on the show for like 2 seasons. So, anyway, predictions.
Predictions.
Moving into season 4, since this is our last Legends until October, probably.
Yeah, I mean, my only prediction is that I assume that we're going to see a different Amaya next season. And this is otherwise, I would have just assumed Amaya's just going to come right back because Zambezi is boring. But at Plexicon, we did hear, like, someone was recording Katie and Maisie talking, and Katie said, maybe for your next character. And then she saw someone recording, so she stopped. So that is why I think that she will be playing a different character, which I assume is either a different Earth Amaya, or potentially she just replaces Megan and plays Mari. Whoever she is, I just hope she does not hook up with Nate again. Please.
Dear God, no. Okay, I feel like it would be too on the nose for Maisie to come back as her own granddaughter, but I wouldn't mind like a doppelganger on a different Earth Amaya, and that she doesn't get with Nate, but instead gets with Zari, because I still, you know, I want that. I need it to be canon, so, you know, let Maisie be gay on screen, please.
Let it happen! I agree. Woo-hoo.
I have no predictions. I did think that Mick was going to leave, but I was wrong, so I'm owning up. But yeah, I think Maisie coming back as another Earth person, I guess, would be the most logical thing, or another version of her from a different time, but I guess that's already been played out, so who knows.
Yeah.
But she will be back, so no tears from the Amaya lovers.
What if she's a villain? That'd be interesting.
Oh, that would be
interesting. Would Amaya come back from Zambezi to help defeat evil Amaya?
That would be interesting, because it'd be like the legends have to battle someone whose face they know very well. Interesting.
Yeah.
I like it. All right. Moving into Black Lightning.
Legs for loyalty.
Yes. Exciting. Tobias is back in Freeland, ladies and gentlemen, and he is back with a vengeance. Not wasting any time, he kills the guy who did not try to rescue Tori, and he's done with that. He was resting the last few weeks, recuperating from his injuries, and we discover that he has been working with Proctor over at the ASA. Proctor tells Tobias that the kids cannot sustain staying alive if they don't discover something soon that will save them while they are stuck in the pods. Proctor is determined to catch Black Lightning alive because he thinks that if they experiment on him, being the only one who took the virus and survived, that they would be able to cure the rest. Not to be forgotten, Khalil returns to Freeland as well with a new look, a new spine, and new abilities, and he's also walking again. He doesn't want to go back to Garfield High School because he doesn't think it's for him anymore now that he's in the big leagues working with Tobias. Jefferson runs into Khalil while on his way to school, and he discovers that he can walk and is immediately suspicious as to how it happened. When telling Khalil that he wants to make sure that he doesn't owe anybody anything for suddenly getting his legs back, Khalil gets mad and says that Freeland abandoned him as soon as he stopped being able to walk and run. Jefferson tells Jennifer that Khalil is back in town, but that he'd prefer her to stay away from him because he doesn't know what he's up to and who he's been hanging out with after speaking with Khalil's mother and realizing that she did not know he was back in town. Jennifer is not having it, though, and still ends up meeting with him. And it's a decent enough meeting up until the point when Khalil tries to kiss her and she backs away and he's put off. Then he gets angry when she asks about the procedure as well that gave him back his legs. What Khalil doesn't realize is that he just can't come back to Freeland thinking he can pick up where he left off with Jennifer, because it doesn't work that way, dude. In order to lure Black Lightning out into the open, Khalil decides to terrorize Garfield High, and Tobias and Cyanide show up to fight Black Lightning and Thunder, who come to protect the school. In the middle of the fight, Tobias takes down Jefferson, but it's Khalil who delivers the final blow to his chest, taking him out and making his heart stop. Jennifer and Anissa find him and freak out because they think he's dead, which he is, and Jennifer, who has been trying to use her powers to help, ends up shocking her dad back to life. They escape to a safe house, and so do Tobias and Khalil, meeting up with Lala later as we discover they're working together and that Tobias put out the hit on Lady Eve. Dun, dun, dun. Over in the subplot, Jeffrey Lynn rises only to be shot down again after Jefferson discovers Lynn is trying to isolate Jennifer's metagene so that she can prevent her powers from being put to use. Jefferson is offended that she wouldn't tell him, but also angry because Jennifer's powers are a part of her and she shouldn't try to get rid of them. And that's what you missed on Black Lightning. Sorry for that, because I was writing this summer using text, voice to text.
Oh no!
I did not go back to check my grammar. So, what did we like about this episode of Black Lightning?
I like that the writers didn't use voice-to-text to write the script. And so it wound up being a very coherent episode. JK, your recap still made lots of story. Anyway, I do love that Tobias is back. That is my number one, like, I'm so glad. And we got to learn what he'd been up to, right? He'd been recovering from his wounds, and the ASA has been helping him out. Like, obviously, we kind of figured that he was working with the ASA, but it was interesting that this is the first time that he's directly dealing with Proctor, right? It was usually, like, through Lady Eve. So he's, and as cautious as he seems at first, right, not knowing exactly where they're going with it, by the end of it, we learn what his real goal is. And so that makes everything much clearer and makes him seem much smarter and also like the big bad that he was always meant to be.
Yes.
Because the ASA sucks. So yeah. Yay, Tobias is back. And it also makes me more confident that there was a scheduling issue, or like there was a reason that he couldn't be in those episodes, because it just kind of felt like, oh, look, here's a new big bad. And then he's like, just kidding, it is Tobias again. So yeah, I assume that there was some reason he couldn't be in the episodes, and that's fine, I forgive you guys. Anyway, I also like that Tobias's return coincided with Khalil's return, because we've been wondering what the fuck was going on with Khalil ever since the time he disappeared in Tobias's car. So now we know that they were working on making him a super villain of his own, and they want to use him to, you know, get rid of Black Lightning. So I like that Khalil doesn't seem to know the whole story. He's a petulant adolescent. He got himself into this situation because he's just, like, mad at the world, right? And he's mad about his circumstances, and he wanted a come up. So at the same time, he's not, like, he doesn't want to go out and hurt people, you know, like, that's not his first instinct. So yeah, I like that there's the possibility that the story can go somewhere else for him instead of, like, down the drain and dead eventually. So, anyway.
Like Will.
Yes, like Will. I don't want him to go the way of Will. I love Lynn calling up Jefferson, seducing him, that little hookup. And that how, I mean, it was hot, and it was also really, like, it was adorable, like they're teenagers again, you know? And so I like that we got that sort of, like, young and fresh aspect from them. I love that lightning coursing through them. And I thought it was funny that they were, like, going to keep it from their kids. Like, again, like, they're teenagers keeping it from their parents. So, I also liked that Jefferson went to Jennifer with the news. Like, he did tell her about Khalil instead of trying to keep it from her, because I feel like he, even after she learned her powers, he was still sort of, like, reluctant to share stuff with her. Like, when he was like, don't go to school, like, for reasons, I'll talk about it later. And then Anissa is there, and he tells Anissa immediately what it is, right? Oh, because kids are getting snatched up with powers. It's like, you could have told Dr. Jennifer that 2 seconds ago. So anyway, I'm glad that he's being more open about it, even if he's still being an overprotective dad. Like, don't see him again, don't do this, don't do that. Like, you know, Jennifer can figure it out. And she did, which I loved. Like, she did go out and see Khalil on the roof, but then listened to him, and then still was like, you know what? That's cool, I'm happy for you, but we're not going to be making out again anytime soon. So yes, I love Jennifer. That is the moral of the story. Okay. I also love seeing Anissa work so seamlessly alongside her dad, and Gandy too, but it's nice to see her, like, sort of, like, them, like, passing information back and forth in the, I don't even know what we're calling it, the Thunder Cave, the Lightning Cave. I don't know.
The Thunderdome,
there you go. And then them both having their, like, one-on-one fights, you know, like, Jefferson's fighting Khalil, what Khalil's name's gonna be, and Cyanide fighting Thunder, right? It was really cool to see sort of, like, each of them have their own mini villain, and this was my favorite use of Thunder's powers. I liked the stomp. Like, I felt like it actually looked good this time. I wasn't taken aback by certain things. I also
as heavy either. Yeah, like run, yeah. Made sense a little bit exactly. More.
Yeah, it worked. It worked well. It looked really cool. And then Jennifer, after all this time struggling, not knowing what to do with her powers, you know, her dad's in trouble, and she actually managed to save him with her power. That was so great. It's great to see that, for her to see that there's actually a use for them. And furthermore, China's performance in that scene was incredible. Like, it was, she's such a natural actress. She can do really intense emotions without feeling over the top. So I was really proud of her in that scene. Proud of both Jennifer and Chyna. And I look forward to seeing how that's going to turn out for them. You know, like, are they going to be like a one big happy five crying family now? Or is there still going to be some, you know, resistance, which would be understandable. Finally, I did love Jefferson going to Khalil's mom and, like, listening to her story and how she really just wanted what was best for her son. It's like she didn't know what she was getting into, but it's what he wanted. And so, like, it's easy when you really are hoping for something to sort of sweep certain details under the rug. So yeah, I felt bad for her, and I liked that we actually got to see that he has a family that cares about him. And the twist that Tobias brought back Lala, that Lala is working with or for, you know, I guess mind controlled by, but they are working together for Tobias to take down ASA, or at least to take down Proctor and then take his seat at the ASA, was awesome. It definitely makes me more excited about the Lala side of things, because up till then I was like, but
I really enjoyed this episode, and I like how it started out with Lynn's like, oh my god, I hope there's a spider, just to get Jefferson to come over. I thought for like sexy times was really great. I thought the music worked, Lynn looked hot, the visual effects of like the electric touches flowing from Jefferson to Lynn, which kind of reminds me, like, on The Flash, like, Barry's vibrating for Jefferson is, like, his, like, little electric touch. So I thought that was really, I like when, you know, superheroes can use their superpowers for other sexy things.
To please their women.
As it should be.
Yeah. Other things happen after that, but, you know, we'll get to that. I like that the ship got to sail for, like, a minute. Tobias, oh man, I love Tobias and I've missed him for so long, so I'm glad that he's back. And to see that he's more or less like the loose thread that has been tying like the whole villain side of things together. Because, you know, first it was just him, and then it was Lady Eve, and so there's like, was Lady Eve the big bad, and how does he connect to that, and who are these like mysterious friends in high places? Oh, it's the ASA, and Tobias is, you know, he wants to see Lady Eve see, and then find out that he wants the whole table, and so it's like, great that it feels like he's being recentered again, like, as the big bad again, because I feel like he should be. Well, I was a little bit momentarily confused why he wanted to work with this obviously racist white man, because Proctor is, like, he's clearly racist, with his motivations and everything what he wanted to do to Freeland. But it made sense in the ending, when Tobias, you know, is planning on taking out Proctor anyway. So I do like that. It kind of keeps his character in place. It's not out of character because he's going to kill this guy anyway. Mm-hmm. I like that he's not only connected to the ASA, but we now know that he's behind Lala's resurrection. We still don't know how he did it, but Lala's storyline is becoming, like, so much more clear to me, knowing that, like, he's, like, a zombie and that he's also, like, controlled. Like, he can't do whatever he wants because it's... And William Catlett, who plays Lala, I thought it was really great in that scene where he picks up the phone and he hears the devil deals the cards, and his, like, whole face just, like, changes, and he's, like, struggling because he doesn't want to go, but he has to go. That whole storyline is a lot more interesting to me now. And then I also like the fact that the overarching show just is so, because Jefferson is so clearly Black Jesus, and it's been, like, reiterated so much throughout the show, and then the opposite of Jesus is, of course, the devil, and, like, Tobias, when he first met Khalil, he was like, there's some, like, I think he asked Khalil if he wanted to do a deal with the devil or something like that, or it was implied, or I can't remember. But in this episode as well, when he's compelling Lala to do his bidding, he's like, the devil deals the cards. He's clearly the devil. So I do like that kind of duality with Jefferson and Tobias, being so ingrained in the show.
Very poetic.
Yeah. And then bringing back Tobias also brings in Khalil. So he's like the center connecting person for all these threads. I'm still side-eyeing Khalil a little bit for his 180-degree turn in personality. But I do like that we circled back around to the spot, first of all. And that it, he's got, like, new legs, new dreads, and then, like, a bad attitude.
But visually, I like all of his stunt scenes and what his role with Tobias and his relationship with Jennifer and his new look, which I have predictions about, what that could all mean for him going down the road. The entire school fight I thought was great. I love Cyanide and Thunder facing off, and I think it was probably the best fight visually out of all the, between like
Josh. Oh, yeah.
Her fight was a lot better. And Cyanide, I don't know what's going on with her, but she's definitely not all human. So, but it was cool to see them face off. And then the Jennifer at all. I love Jennifer, period. But I like how desperate she was to get her powers to work in the school. Like, she's trying to, like, make something happen when her sister was fighting. And then, I guess, I don't think I've ever said this out loud as far as, like, prediction, but I always felt like since Jefferson is a battery and Jennifer is a generator, that at some point, like, Jennifer was going to, like, feed Jefferson, like, in a fight, like, if they ever needed it, like, he could draw off her powers. And it kind of happened in this episode where it was her power that kind of shocked him back to her. And so I liked that she was able to, her first time really using her powers was to save her dad. So it was great.
Yes, I very much enjoyed Jennifer Lynn's, pardon the pun, electric reunion. I did not expect Lynn to call him over and act like she needed help with Spider only for them to have sex. So that was like a nice surprise because I've been waiting for that the whole season. Tobias is back and I've never been more happy to see him. Like he was gone for too long and I noticed and I didn't like it, but now he's back and it's great. And I really like that he got right back to business and, you know, he proved himself to be, like, the big deal. He's the big shit that we always knew that he was, but now it's, like, in a more meaningful and terrifying way. And he actually went to Garfield High because we've seen him before, but I feel like this is the first time he really went out there and fought and did all of these things. And he fought Black Lightning face-to-face, which I thought was impressive. And they actually brought back Khalil in a big way, and it felt like a game changer because I didn't think that they were really going to do much with him, but I should stop thinking that about the show because it's all tying together. I did like seeing the everyday hero again in Jefferson when he went to talk to Khalil's mom and not just, I know that he was going for the reason to find out what happened to Khalil and who helped him get his, you know, the ability to walk back, but I like that he showed genuine concern for his mom because she was kind of left behind. She knew what was going on. I love the fight at Garfield and how Cyanide actually caught the fact that Anissa had to take a deep breath to activate her powers because she took that moment to, like, hit her back and, like, yeah. She actually noticed.
I told you!
It happened!
So, like, that fight was between them, you're right, it was the absolute best. The visuals, the stunts, everything. The way it was choreographed. And I love that Lynn was actually working on isolating the gene that gives Jennifer her powers so that she can help her because that's what her daughter wants. So, Lynn continues being the best mom. She's awesome. And I also love the fact that Jennifer later tried and failed to activate her powers, like Jess said, but that she was successfully able to use them to save her dad's life. And I think that scene for her was very well acted and it was a powerful moment, and I like that there's like a build-up and a distinct journey that is leading her to eventually want to train and suit up, but I feel like it's happening in a way that's very natural. And I did like that Jefferson did try to warn Jen away from Khalil, even though we knew she wouldn't listen because teenagers will do whatever they want, but he tried. Finally, it was really nice to see Gambi working with Jefferson again, and then Jefferson and Anissa teaming up is always really, really great because they work so well together. And Lala's return finally has a direction now that Tobias is back, and I'm really excited. But what did we not like?
Oh, no. Well, as much as I like Jefferson hooking up, I didn't like Jefferson, you know, breaking up again. especially, I don't know, the way that it was brought up, like, he finds out from Jennifer that Lynn is sort of helping her with, like, suppressing the powers. And it was just, I don't know, it's kind of annoying to me, like, because on the one hand, like, yes, you should tell Jefferson that y'all are doing this, but it is what Jennifer wants, right? So, I don't know, it's kind of, to say like, oh, you're too young to know what you want, is not, I mean, I don't feel like that's a, whatever, I feel like that's wrong. So Jefferson is wrong, as usual. But but at the same time, yeah, she should tell him. So, like, they have huge, like, communication issues that they need to work on. And that maybe if, instead of saying just like, oh, well, I'm glad we didn't tell our kids, another communication problem that we have, because we're not getting back together now, they actually work on it, maybe it wouldn't have taken them 9 years to get back together. Anyway, as much as I liked that Jefferson went to talk to Jennifer about Khalil, I didn't like that before that, like, they were, like, working on stuff together, like, with Anissa and whatnot, and, like, not roping Jennifer in, which I guess is part of, like, because she's just not using her powers now, right? But she still has them, and she's still in danger, so I think that you'd want to keep her in the loop from the, to begin with. And then him telling her, you know, like I already said, like, he tells her, like, you should do this, and you shouldn't do that, and you shouldn't do this. And I'm like, can't wait for her to turn 18, so you'll stop doing that, I guess, because I guess that's the only difference. Even though Anissa also lives in the house, so. Anyway, that's all. Other things. Yes. Khalil, I like that he can, you know, hopefully be redeemed. But I don't want him with Jennifer, because that ship has sailed, and he was a shit boyfriend. He had the potential to be a great boyfriend, and he ruined it. So, no more. That's all.
Yeah. Like, with Jefferson and Jennifer, in what universe does a parent tell their child, don't do this? And the child is like, okay. A boy, like, stay away from this boy. Sure, Dad. You know, like, how do you even think that was going to work? That was clearly not going to work. So I don't even know why he tried that. I didn't like the whole Jefferson fight either, because it's pretty obviously a miswording from a moody, dramatic teenager, for one. Like, she's like, you know, it's kind of like the equivalent of, I hate you, and, you know, just... She's being dramatic about her powers because, you know, her life sucks right now. And then, too, like, Lynn could barely get in a word edgewise. It would have cleared up the entire misunderstanding. So the whole fight came off a little bit forced. And it was, like, reopening the old wounds around framing the situation as Lynn thinking Jefferson's powers are an addiction and not considering the point of view that it's Jennifer's body and it's Jennifer's choice. I like the show, actually. The show Twitter actually tweeted out something similar using that scene and saying that it was her choice. So if they could only, like, express that a little bit more in the show, that would be great. like, Lynn helping Jennifer, understanding her powers, is the way to help Jennifer feel in control of a situation that she previously had no control over. So that's how I see it. And so I hope at some point that side of things is presented in narrative as well. I think that Khalil still needs an attitude adjustment. He didn't exactly apologize to Jennifer for being an asshole. And when she curbed him, he lashed out at her in anger again, so he's still an asshole. So he still has some work to do. Martin Proctor is becoming less ASA and more KKK, the more I... And the fact that he orders various black people around, like Lady Eve, Bounty, and now Tobias, to do his bidding makes me just super uncomfortable and confused as to why any of them would help anyway. We know now why Tobias is there, but, you know, why is Lady Eve, and why is, it makes Bounty even shadier, because why the fuck is she, like, with this dude? Like, what is she, I don't understand.
Bounty needs a backstory.
He's made, like, no secret to Tobias that the whole plan was to turn black people into slaves, pretty much. That the new version of Greenlight is supposed to turn these black kids into superpowered, obedient slaves. So, you know, I don't really understand why Martin Proctor is getting so far with black people helping him.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I mean, yeah. I guess Tobias is, like, kind of, like, has, like, some, like, internalized, like, hatred based on his treatment. Yeah.
I know he has, like, internalized hatred on that respect, but, I still don't see him being, like, you know, because he feels superior, but I think he also feels superior to white people, too. So.
Right, he's not going to feel like he wants to be under someone who clearly sees him as lesser. I agree with that.
Yeah.
All good points. I didn't, well, no, they are, don't laugh. That's a is a great point about the Proctor feeling like the KKK, because like when he's on screen, obviously what he's doing is bad, but I guess because he doesn't get as much screen time either, it's not like an immediate thing. So I totally agree, Jess. And as much as I was happy to see Tobias back on my screen, I was a bit surprised by the fact that all of his mourning for Tori was apparently done off screen. Like, he just comes back and kills the guy that left her behind to die, but that's it. I guess, I don't know, I expected more since they were super close. So that surprised me. And I also didn't like they were trying to break up Jeffrey Lynn so soon after they just got back together over something I didn't think was that serious. Like Tati mentioned, this is something of Jennifer's decision about her life and her body. And while I get Jefferson may have been mad that Lynn didn't mention it, it's still not his decision to make. So I think he jumped the gun a little bit in saying that he's glad they didn't tell the kids that they got back together, because he didn't even let her explain before he went off. So that's not cool, Jefferson. Get it together, man. 9 years is too long. Anyway, no to Khalil ever coming near Jennifer again. I know he apologized, but then he immediately showed his true colors again as soon as he didn't get what he wanted from her. So he's still canceled on that front. And I agree with Jess about Proctor, which I already said, but disturbed by like what his initial plans were. And I hope that they explain why Foudy is working with him specifically, because she doesn't seem to have the complex that Tobias has. So I don't know how her plans go along with his. Like, when did she start working with him? We don't know. So I guess we do need that Foudy backstory. Into predictions. Going into the season finale, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, like, when I was, like, watching the show, I was, like, tweeting, like, DMing out, like, Khalil looks very static shocky. Like, he's got dreads, the little gloves that he had. He's got a super spine, so he got super strength. Like, he looks pretty, if they were going to redeem him and turn him into Static Shock, like, he has the look already, so, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's, like, my only prediction, because I feel like it's so wide open. Like, there's one episode left of the season, and there's so many ways that it could go, so I have no idea.
I feel like he won't be Static Shock tomorrow, but... But I do feel like, because at first I thought it was going to be Will, because Will is technically the right shade, but he's dead and he's not coming back. And because I think because Javier, the guy that plays Will, was like, I want to be Static Shock. And then Jordan Calloway comes with these long ass dreads and and super strength. Well, and he's talking about his legs were like electrified at one point. So I was like, that sounds like a hint. Oh, yeah. Also, like, another reason why he could be Static Shock is the connection to Jennifer is not as dead as we want it to be. So there's something still there that she could bring him back from the dark side. So
agreed.
I think that's still very much a possibility. I think the finale will end in a stalemate with Proctor dead, but not dead by Black Lightning's hands, but dead because Tobias killed him. And Tobias took over the ASA. And then I think also, ultimately, Lynn's research on Jennifer to isolate her metagene will get into the wrong hands, aka Tobias' hands, and be like the key that they need to stabilize the pod kids, who will now be under Tobias' control and set up the attack T-plot.
I agree with that. That sounds correct.
I can see that happening, but I agree definitely that Khalil, he's going to be Static Shock at some point. Probably not. Obviously, we only have one more episode. But he's probably also going to get a redemption storyline in that case if he does turn out to be Static Shock. I also think that Jennifer, I'm so confused today. Jennifer will decide she wants to keep her powers by the end of the finale, but she'll train and get her suit in season 2.
I like it.
Right. Side A, Lady with Gumption nominations. Who do you choose and why?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, this is a tough one for me. I'm thinking thoughts. And I'm thinking thoughts by looking up our list of ladies' assumptions so far. So that. Let's see. All right. Going by shows, is there anyone from Legends Tomorrow that we think should be the lady with gumption? I feel like if there was one, it would be Sarah. She did stand up to Mollus alone, and she did come up with a lot of the plan, but I don't know that she
ran away from it for like most of the episode.
Yeah. I don't know that she, you know, did all that much.
I mean, she did wield the death totem after being scared of wielding the death totem, so I guess that's something.
That's true. She does have the death
totem. It was her, like, after wielding the death totem.
Yeah. But it was like, I don't know. I feel like the Legends finale was more of you know,
a group effort.
A group effort.
All right. So, Black Lightning. Do we have a lady with gumption for Black Lightning? I mean, I feel like I could say Jennifer.
Has she been a nom before?
She has not been a nom before.
Because I think that she was going to be my nom as well for this side.
Yeah, because I feel like she, you know, is working through her powers and just went ahead. She made her own choices, right? She didn't let her dad dictate her choices. Yeah. But at the same time, when it came down to it and her dad is actually, literally needs her, she did come through.
Yeah.
She's not totally aware of how she came through.
I feel like for her, like you said, like she made her own choices throughout the episode, but she was also, she didn't just disobey her dad because she wanted to disobey her dad. She saw Khalil, but she still had in the back of her mind, you know, what her dad said, and she didn't just start making out Khalil and just believing everything that came out of his mouth.
Right. And she made her own choices, but she was prudent about them.
Yeah. And then when he was at the school, like, she was trying to, like, stop him and just trying to speak to him, trying to get through to him. She stayed behind to help, you know, the kids in the school. The fact that she was so scared of her powers, but when her sister was in trouble and could use some help, which technically she didn't need any help, but Jennifer was like, I want to help my sister, and she's trying to, like, make something happen. So I think the fact that she ran towards the danger instead of away from the danger, she's more of a hero than she knows. But the fact that she was able to come through in the end and actually save her father's life, I thought was really great.
And I will third this, because Jennifer is one of my favorite characters on Black Lightning, and she finally deserves to rise and get the attention that she's always deserved. And I think this episode really gave it to her. And I agree with all your points, not to reiterate the same thing. But I think that in terms of her fearing, specifically of her fearing her powers for so many episodes now, the fact that she did stay behind and tried so desperately to make them work, but finally came through in the end to help her father and didn't just sit back and not do anything, was very, very brave of her. And she's just an incredibly smart character. So, love her.
Yeah. I don't think she gets credit for that, but she is.
Yeah. I agree with y'all.
All right.
I agree with y'all and with myself. Jennifer!
So side A, Lady with Gumption nominee is Jennifer Pierce. We will take a quick break and we'll be back with side B, where we talk about Krypton, a little bit of Krypton, Flash, and Arrow. Ralph, I swear to God, / your own worst enemy.
Welcome back to side B of Ladies with Gumption. This is the Flash and Arrow portion titled Ralph, I swear to God, / your own worst enemy. I am Jessica, and I am here with May and Tatiana, and we'll be talking to you about our mini Krypton feels, and then our Flash and Arrow regular feels. But first, we got a lot of feedback on the Flash, because the title of the episode was Nolan Annoyed, and that seems to be the perfect description for how most of the fandom felt about this episode. An email from Latonia, and she wanted to share her frustration at this episode. Why is Ralph still here? She asked. She loves Barry and Iris, but she did not like that the show used Iris to prop up Ralph. She doesn't agree with the writing justifying Ralph and not doing things Barry's way, which we also absolutely have a lot of feels about. She did try to find, like, the silver lining in some of these moments. And so, for example, Barry immediately recognizing that Iris had something on her mind, And so there's still like a little bit of connection, that a little bit of Wes Allen that you could get out of the mess that was that episode. She liked that we got to spend some time with Cisco, even if that storyline was a little meh, and she enjoyed DeVoe and Marlies. And she loves us, so, you know, that's a good thing. Thank you for your email, Latonia. We also got someone that slid into our DMs, which
is nice. Phoenix Iris, or at Love Iris West, slid into our DMs, like Jessica said, and wanted to give her feedback on yesterday's Flash episode. So while she totally agreed with Barry's decision that Ralph should be benched, parentheses, for all eternity, she thinks Iris should have been the one making that decision because she is the leader and Barry never even consulted her about it. Which, you know, I can see that. I didn't even think about that, but yeah, that makes sense. But, like, you think that they would talk about it first. And she then said, I liked everything except the Ralph scenes and the fact that Iris was reduced to being Ralph's cheerleader. Which I think it's like, if I go back and look at the episode, I mean, we're about to talk about it, but yeah, the Ralph scenes, there's a reason why this side is called Ralph, I swear to God.
Yeah.
And we also got an email from Tasha, who's our, you know, regular Arrow correspondent, which we'll talk about in the Arrow section as well. Krypton, we're still doing the little mini impressions, and so we had episode 4. What did you guys think about it?
Well, Lyta is still my favorite character, and dare I say, I actually cared about Seg this episode, but only because he showed he actually cared for Lyta, and I care for Lyta, so I guess I care about him by extension. He was pissed and got mad at her mom, thought Nyssa could help, and he went all out, and that made me a little bit soft inside. I am a bit salty that after saving Rom, she's still gonna die. Like, I don't understand why she was saved if she's just gonna die, so that pissed me off. Nyssa finally gets some shit to do, and I liked her appealing to Lyta and also trying to convince her that she can be trusted, which she can't, probably, but Nyssa's still playing a game, but at least she's moving away from just following her dad around all episodes, so that was nice. And it was plot movement. We finally know what House Vex wants to do, which is overthrow the voice of Rao, who's creepy as fuck, by the way, and even more of a threat than Brainiac, I think. And I was sad that Lyta has to go through a trial and is charged with treason, but it's nice to know she has a lot of people on her side. And I'm still very much enjoying the development we're getting with her and her mom. And now we know that all Lyta really wanted was a mother growing up and not a general, which is very sad. But it's clear Jaina cares deeply about her daughter, which is super great because mother-daughter dynamics for the win, which is rare on DC TV show. I loved seeing Colin Salmon. Colin Salmon. He played Arthur on Arrow. He was Oliver's stepdad. And I immediately recognized his face and his voice.
Walter.
Yes. And I like that he could potentially be Black Zero and that it's finally sort of explained about what he wants to do, but I'm intrigued by his character.
All right. I'm also intrigued by his character. I love Colin Salmon, however you say his last name. And whether he is Black Zero, like the leader of Black Zero, or, because in this episode, Jaina was like, one thing I know is that no Zod is a traitor. I don't know. He could be General Zod. Oh. That's all I'm saying. So either way, that is exciting. anyway. Nyssa finally got interesting, thank God. And we finally, like, learn what she and her dad want, right? And that coincided really well with the big twist of the episode, which, I mean, I guess we'll just talk about it now, right? Like, I loved that. Like, that was the thing that was, I guess, my favorite part of the episode, right? Because at first I was like, what the fuck is this with the Sentry? Like, who cares? It doesn't matter. But then when we find out that the Sentry actually wants to move, right, to the most powerful piece, or the most powerful person, and then it, like, went from Rom to Ona's toy, and then Ona gave the toy to the fucking voice of Rao, and now the voice of Rao is Brainiac. And the voice of Rao, actor, the back of his head, looks like the back of the actor who plays Brainiac's head. So maybe this is how Brainiac gets to where he is, you know what I'm saying? full circle. That would make the season more interesting, so I hope that's the case. Anyway, Lyta has two dudes in love with her, and that's awesome, except doesn't do shit for her when she's about to be executed for treason, and both of them are useless. So, I was very sad that we did not get very much Lyta in this episode. I would have liked a lot more, but like you know, you pointed out, it was really nice to see Sag go out of his way to try and save her, even if he then got distracted, you know, with Black Zero nonsense. But I was excited to see him express a lot of emotion about that and to say a world without Lyta is not, or like Krypton without Lyta can just basically explode. Whatever he said, it was great. Okay, anyway, and I like that Adam was like, oh well, okay, in that case, I guess we gotta do something. Anyway. I love Kim and I want to protect him. He is wonderful. I felt so bad for him, like, when he, like, because he was like, oh, please be nice to Ona, and then the dude was like, all right, Ona's mine now, and he's like, I didn't want that. That's not what I was saying. I totally agree with you, though, that Rom dying is just like, okay, why the fuck did you not die before then? Why did you fake get saved, and now you're dead? Anything that I didn't talk about, I just don't care about. Like, it's really hard. I can't even remember what happened. unless I cared about it. And if I cared about it, that's why I talked about it. Yeah. I love Varys and Selmy from Game of Thrones, but I don't like that he doesn't look like a hologram. I mentioned that before. It's still true now. I think that Dev needs more to do, because right now all I know about him is that he's a nice dude who is stick with the rules and he loves Lyta. And Lyta clearly does not seem to love him, but he doesn't, like, talk about how it's, like, it's not like he's pressuring her. He's not like, we're meant to be together. The way that Nyssa is like, well, we already have a fucking child, so obviously we're meant to be together. But, like, he doesn't say that, so I'm like, are y'all even, like, bound like that? Or are y'all just, like, y'all were dating for a while, and now he still thinks you're getting married, and she does not? Like, I don't know. I want understanding of this situation. That's all.
Oh, but they revealed the name of the potential child, which is not going to happen.
Right. But like, I knew that from the beginning. I knew that it wasn't going to happen because I knew that name was not the name. But yeah, so your child is nonsense. Your child is imaginary, isn't it? Anyway.
Yes, that actually says that a world without Lyta isn't worth saving. And so, like, put that on my tombstone, please, because I thought that was the best line of the episode. And I thought there definitely wasn't enough Lyta in this episode, but I do like that the whole plot revolved around rescuing her. And it's, like, the strongest emotion that Seg has had about literally anything. Yes. I feel like it was really good to see that kind of, like, motivation from him that, you know, when she is in danger, that he wanted to do anything and everything needed to be done to rescue her. And then I think it's kind of funny that Dev knows that Seg is in love with Lyta because he was already, like, squaring up when Seg walked through the door. Jaina knows that her daughter and Seg are in love. Nyssa knows that Seg is in love with Lyta. I was like, I thought y'all were supposed to be in a secret relationship. But, like, literally everybody knew. Nyssa, like, I agree that it's good that she has started to get more to do. I guess Dev is a new Nyssa now because he still doesn't really have a lot to do. But I told y'all that she was good looking expensive. So that whole thing was, like, trying on dresses with holograms.
That was very clueless of her. I was like, I remember Sharon Horowitz doing this.
Yeah, and then, like, her, like, dropping her clothes in front of Seg, like, you know, come on, you're trying way too hard here. And he's not going for it.
Like, hold at back. All, his face is just like, okay, I don't know what's happening.
But even she has to, like, help Lyta out because she needs Seg and she needs Jaina in front of it. She needs House of Zod to, you know, take over the Voice of Rao. And I like that they set up House of Zod being like a house of honor, and how that's so important to them. Yeah, that baby's not happening. Well, Rao and Brainiac, I thought, got really interesting because I was wondering, like, in the first scene is the scene of Rao getting ready for his walk through the streets. And then it makes sense later first of all, I don't really know how the Sentry got from Rom to Ona because they never met again, like, when she uploaded the stuff. And then she never talked to Ona or met with Ona. So how did the injury get from Rom to Ona's toy. I don't know. But
I thought, didn't Kem give it to her? Like, maybe. Didn't it go from Rom to Kem to Ona?
Oh, maybe. Okay. Thank you for making that make sense. But, but I thought it was interesting because not only did Rao take the toy from Ona, he also took Ona. And I was thinking, like, in the beginning, Rao getting dressed, he wanted to move up the Nova Cycle on purpose. Like, it wasn't supposed to be that day, but he was like, I want to do it now. And then Mick is like, did he know that there's a little girl there that's supposed to give him a toy that changes him into Brainy?
Wow, dun. Works in mysterious ways.
Yeah. And I also feel like it's really weird that Rao is obviously really creepy as fuck in Krypton, but Kara worships Rao, or the religion of Rao.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure what the timeline is.
Maybe he goes through a lot of growth in 200 years.
It's weird. And then the Black Zero subplot with Seg, I thought was interesting, but that torture bug was just gross as fuck. Mm. Like, that was nasty. Yeah. But, I mean, I think that Cameron, who plays Seg, said that episodes 1 through 3 were supposed to set the board. Episode 4, they flipped the board. And then the back half is just like full throttle all the way to the end. So we'll see if that is indeed the way that it goes. So that's all for Krypton. So now we'll get into our recaps of the Flash and Arrow. So May, you can take it away.
Oh, and what is perhaps the worst episode of season 4? Flash is back from its hiatus, and I thought I'd be happier about it, but I'm not. Barry and Ralph are training so they can take down DeVoe. Cisco's even created a great simulation for it, and the plan is to have Ralph morph into Barry so they confuse DeVoe, but Ralph can't get his shit together long enough to follow orders and instead jokes about the whole thing. Which, whatever, you know. You know that's wrong when even Cisco isn't the one making jokes anymore in dire situations. Barry gets pissed off at Ralph's nonchalant attitude and his juvenile sense of humor, and he has plenty of words to say to the man-child, who ends up walking away. Iris tells him, for whatever reason that she does this week, to take it easy on Ralph, and it's the first time I can remember saying, I love you, Iris, but Barry yelling at Ralph is what he deserves. Harry tracks down the next bus meta on the list, who ends up being a jewel thief who goes by the name of Null. When Ralph and Barry go after her the first time, she whammies Barry and fills him with helium so that he just floats and she's able to get away. Back at the lab, Barry is frustrated because he's still floating and angry with Ralph because he failed to follow orders like the man baby that he is. Again. Barry yells at him again and tells him this isn't a joking matter and this is not just the other bus metas, but also his life on the line as well. Iris, because the writers have no shame, again, becomes Ralph's cheerleader, defends the dumbass, and asks Barry if he's more angry with Ralph for not listening and going with the plan, and not going with the plan because it's Barry's plan. Which is nonsense, because Ralph is a trash character who never listens regardless of the day of the week. Iris also tells Barry that Ralph can be a hero because he's done it in the past. Oh, but we forgot that he has to be coerced into saving people. But anyway, sometimes he just needs to do things the Dibney way, whatever the fuck that means. Barry isn't completely convinced when they finally take on Null for the last time. Ralph's off the bat thinking comes in handy, and he saves Barry from falling to his death by providing a cushion for him to land on. He tells Ralph in the end that he is a good hero and the team is better off with him on it, which is probably the worst thing that's come out of Barry's mouth this entire season. Over in the subplot, Preacher, my god, my voice text. Breacher stops by Earth 19 to ask Cisco for his help in trying to figure out why he can no longer use his powers after taking down vampires and Crucifer. Cisco and Caitlin run all the tests and discover that it's not the vampires or dragon who took Breacher's powers, but that it was just the result of Father Time. Cisco is too scared to break the news to Breacher because they finally reach the point where he's actually nice to him, especially since Cisco is trying to get Cynthia to come over to Earth 1 more often, seeing as how Breacher is her boss and he doesn't see her enough. Breacher is initially annoyed with Cisco but ends up being okay and offers Cisco to replace him as the Breacher of Earth 19, leaving Cisco to contemplate possibly doing so in the future. The episode ends with Harry activating Gideon, who probably believes him to be E.O. Wells from season 1, and that is what you missed on the worst episode of The Flash. Ladies, what did we like?
So, I like that. That was great. Yeah,
now you know how May feels.
Yeah.
I have more thoughts.
But there, as she clearly pointed out, there was not a lot to like about this episode, which was dull as fuck and anger-inducing as well, clearly. But one thing I did like is Kim Engelbrecht, whose last name I cannot spell. I spell it wrong every single time. I'm sorry. I love you. You're wonderful. I know the L goes after the E. Gave an amazing performance. All of Marlies' scenes like made me feel like I was trapped in a suspense thriller with her. I don't know. I was like, what is this fucking memento? Like, what is going on? How is she going to figure it out? What has she been doing to figure it out? Obviously, I didn't like what was happening to her. But the way that she discovered it, and then her recording that message for herself, only to find out she'd already fucking done it, and then you know the cycle's going to repeat itself, and then the final scene between them is the same thing as the first scene, except with one less meta. Like, ah! Okay, I love that. That was so great. If that had been the whole fucking episode, it would have been a much better episode. Yeah.
You see, I was anyway. So caught up with Ralph, I forgot to mention the whole Marlies subplot, so boom! Fuck you, Ralph. Carry on.
Ralph made you do it! Anyway, it was horrible in the best way. On the other hand, I did enjoy the Cisco and Breacher storyline. I thought it was cute. I liked that we got to see how Cisco feels about not having Cynthia around. You know, because, like, for several episodes now, it's like, you could have almost forgotten that he's dating her. But now it's like, you get to experience some of his frustration, which then does make Breacher's offer later more palatable. And I also love how Trejo plays Josh Breacher. I like that sort of, like, he goes between, like, being super aggressive and then also being super vulnerable, and he's believable in both, and that we see a little bit of progression for their dynamic, right? Like, it's like getting, like, they're getting more comfortable with each other, even though Cisco still fears for his life around him. He is able to sort of communicate better with him, and Breacher is trying to be a little bit more understanding, as hard as it is for him, right? Because it's his way or the highway. Or the death way. I also like that because of this storyline, we got to have a little bit of killer vibe friendship for the first time in a really long time. And, like I said, Breacher's offer to Cisco was genuinely surprising and, like, something that he should actually think about, you know? Like, he better say no in the end, but it makes sense for him to be like, well, fuck, I don't, you know, see my family ever. I don't get money. Like, I need to eat, and this would be an actual job. I don't see my girlfriend. She lives on this earth. I could go live on this earth with her. You know, I don't feel like I'm needed right now because Ralph is eating all the screen time and storylines. So it would make sense for him to think about it. And then hopefully something will happen that makes him decide that he needs to stay on our show, basically. But anyway, I loved the Jay and Silent Bob cameo. I thought that was really great. Like, obviously, they can't say Jay and Silent Bob, because even though they created those characters, they don't have the rights to them. But you could tell that it was clearly Jay and Silent Bob. And then you're wondering, how the fuck did they wind up as working in this place? I can't even remember what. like working for the museum, like our security guard for the. Yeah, like, how did they do this? Who would give them this job? I don't know. Someone did. And then it wasn't even their fault when they broke that $4,000 or $40,000. It was fucking Ralph. See? That's also gross. Anyway. Null had potential. Her powers were, you know, could have been interesting. Her one-liners were fun, but we didn't get to see her very much, so. Anyway, finally, the other thing that could have stayed in the episode was that final moment with Harry and Gideon, where, you know, he shows up and she calls him, like, as if he were season one, Harrison Wells, and says it's been 1,000-whatever days since they spoke, and now we have to wait to see, and he's like, oh, a lot's changed, though. I cannot wait. I can't wait to see where that's going. So that was cool. That was, like, a chilling scene. That's
yeah.
all.
Iris looked good. I get, like, a tiny bit of Verisco West in the opening sequence when they're all, like, frustrated with Ralph. I thought Noel was, like, cute, angry, small, and I liked that she was also, like, a smart villain, that she had, like, a getaway car and could escape the handcuffs, and so she wasn't, like, an easy get for Team Flash. And I think she deserved a better episode, but I liked her, and that she had so many tactics to get what she wanted. She was clearly an accomplished thief even before her powers, because she had, like, a photo shoot worth of
like police precinct pictures, so she clearly knew what she was doing. Wajan's silent Bob was really realistically integrated into the episode, and I thought it was a really cool way to include Kevin Smith in the episode that he's directing. But the best part of the episode just has to be like Marlies. And like, I'm forming a Marlies DeVoe protection squad after this episode. So if you want to join up
and, yes,
and protecting Marlies from Clifford DeVoe, then, you know, we'll have meetings on Tuesdays. I thought Kim Engelbrecht was amazing in her scenes. I cheered when she started noticing like the Weeper series, like, yes! And then I cried when I found out that she had already done this before. But it was just really, like you said, it's really chilling to see it and suspenseful. And then her reminder video, she put it in a file called New Lemonade Recipe. So she made a video to remind herself to escape from her lying-ass, emotionally manipulative husband and called it Lemonade. So let that sink in. I was, like, ultimately heartbroken that this wasn't her first go-through and she's still stuck with him. And it just proves how sick Clifford actually is. But hopefully, I'm even more confident that she'll get her revenge in the end, that Team Flash will be able to, like, recruit her, and Iris can get her information. And she can be a key piece in defeating her husband, so.
Yeah, I think the most chilling part was when he was like, you are nothing without me. Whereas before he said, I am nothing without you. And so the tables have turned, but I completely agree. Kim Engelbrecht was amazing, phenomenal. And that's all you really need to know about the sorry ass episode, but that unfortunately exists. But there are a couple of more likes that I do have. Like Marlies' reactions to finding out she'd been drugged were devastating and awful, but so very well acted. And the fact that she's apparently been in the cycle before, like you guys said, and then getting drugged again was like a new, whole new level of abuse that was so hurtful and terrible. And I just can't wait for her to kick Clifford's ass all the way to another Earth. Maybe send him to like the farthest reaches of the galaxy. I don't know. But that's just, it was insane. And I think Sisko and Breacher's interactions were fun, and it's nice to see that their relationship has progressed to the point that Breacher trusts Sisko to take over for him on Earth 19, because I think that that's come a long way from when they first met. And I also like the little glimpse of Sisko's sadness that he doesn't get to see Cynthia more, because his sadness is my sadness, because I want to see Cynthia more too. And I also like the bits of Sisko and Caitlin's friendship, because it feels like forever since we've seen that. And I also enjoyed seeing Barry, Iris, and Sisko being a training team together, and I just need more of that in my life. Jesse L. Martin acting as Ralph was fun to see, just because it was Jesse L. Martin. And finally, I did think the Jay and Silent Bob cameo was super cute and wasn't over the top, which was nice, so it kind of just fit in with the whole episode. But what did we not like? And I can already tell there's going to be a lot. Go.
What? I loved everything. It was the best episode. I don't know what y'all are talking about. No, that is a lie. Obviously, there was one major thing that I did not like, and that one major thing is fucking Ralph. He felt like he consumed the entire episode, and I cannot wait for his ass to die. I do not like to wish ill upon fictional characters or real people, but this time I really cannot wait. I'm so excited. Next week, it's Ralph Death Day, and we are all going to celebrate. Fozia's buying cake, and we're all going to eat it through the internet. All right.
I'm bringing the tequila.
There we go. He brought down the episode just, like, so hard. Like, you know, like a helium-inflated berry falling to the ground is what Ralph did to the episode. His sense of humor has totally warped the show into something that it's not. And making everyone aggravated with him 100% of the time doesn't actually make it more enjoyable to watch him crack jokes. It was almost better when he said shit and people just ignored it and continued on. Like, making him saying shit the point of the episode makes for a really bad episode, it turns out. I didn't like the writers using Iris as a mouthpiece to explain why what he's doing may actually work. Like, I felt, like, on the one hand, I'm like, I appreciate that you think that Iris is powerful enough to make me like Ralph, but on the other hand, I don't appreciate how wrong this is. Like, it's not, Barry's not being too controlling. Like, he was just like, Ralph, please pay attention. He wasn't actually being like, Ralph, do it this way, you know? So, whatever. The fact that they turned it into Barry, you know, wanting people to think like him, when Barry doesn't even get to think for himself, because, like, speaking of, I'm tired of them dumbing down the lead character, who is also supposed to be a genius and a scientist, so that they can make room for other characters to do bullshit. Like, mostly Ralph for this season, but also a little bit Harry. Like, why is Harry the one tinkering with the thinking cap, and, like, Barry's not even trying it? It was supposed to be the fastest man alive versus the fastest mind alive, but ever since the second half of the season, Barry has not been doing anything versus the thinker. Anyway. So yeah, Harry's fiddling with the cap, Barry is learning to improv from Ralph, and that's it. No one else is doing anything for DeVoe, because we don't even know what DeVoe wants or how DeVoe's gonna get it. Like, there is no stakes right now. The only stake is that Ralph doesn't like it because he's gonna die. And I want Ralph to die. So I don't really feel like the villain is creating any tension for me. Moving on, Ralph, not moving on because it's still going to be about Ralph, but Ralph talking about his childhood backstory and how his dad left, so he used to make his mom laugh or whatever. I was so, like, I just rolled my eyes. Like, Hartley did a great job, you know, I was like, oh, good acting, but I just don't care. I don't care about his bad existence. I don't care about it making him a loser man, you know, a garbage dumpster of a human being. I just do not care. So I hated that he saved the day. I had to shout out to the Whoopi Cushion effect. Like, Armin, you did a great job with a stupid thing. But it looked really good. I'm just sad that it was that. And then Harry had to apologize for how he behaved and also praise Ralph and say that Ralph should be on the team. Like, no, this is not true. I know you're just saying this because he's going to die next week. I just got to hold on. Hold on. 1 week more. I just cannot stand that we're 17 episodes. Okay. Side note, you know, the episode would only have been, like, I guess mediocre or just, like, slightly aggravating if Ralph were the only problem, but we also have a plotting issue that we are 17 issues in and we don't know what DeVoe wants. So, like I said, we have no stakes, but unlike Legends, where we also had no stakes for most of the season, I'm not having fun watching Ralph do bullshit, so I can't ignore that we have no stakes. It is glaringly obvious, and I don't know how they sort of lost the plot, because I felt like the first half of the season was building up really well towards, you know, like, reveal of the plan, and now here's how we're going to deal with it. And instead they were like, Barry's in jail for a couple episodes, but we don't really know why. Like, it's not really a reason. He's just going to be in jail, okay? And it's like, okay, now we're going to have two really good episodes that don't forward the plot, and now we're just, still don't know what we're doing. Just hold on, you know, we'll be right back after these messages. All right, that's all.
Yeah. Like, this was definitely my least favorite episode of the season, and maybe ever. Because, like, Ralph, like, I'm tired, and I'm almost not really numb to him being annoying and overwhelming the whole show because it's just routine at this point. But I'm even more upset that the writers use Iris to prop up Ralph over Barry, and then have Barry apologize throughout the end. Like, fuck that, honestly. Like, not even Iris can make Ralph look better in this episode. She tried, but it was like, I wasn't buying it. And I'm kind of mad that Barry bought it. The reasoning that, you know, that we should let Ralph be his own little special snowflake was even weak and not really accurate, because Ralph wasn't improvising as he was just being, like, a distraction and uncooperative. Like, there's a difference between someone, like, making jokes, you can tell that they are actually scared of what is actually behind that, and then what Ralph was doing. Like, it made no sense whatsoever in the episode. And he wasn't being an eager team player and trying to get Barry to think outside the box. Like, that's not what he was doing at all. And so I just call, like, bullshit on his whole sob story, because if that was the point they were trying to make, then they totally missed the mark on the kind of humor that would have hinted at this underlying insecurity. And they just did not do that well at all. And it wasn't even a fucking character trait until this episode. And I really hate, because they did this a lot with Ralph. They like, exaggerate his emotional insecurity into chunks so that they blow it up in one episode and let it go unchecked for the entire episode. So it's like 30 minutes of Ralph being a fuck up. And then at the end, it's like revealed that he's a fragile snowflake and we should forgive him. And it's like, and then you never see that character trait ever again. So basically it's one, like, long, giant, fucking Sour Patch Kid commercial where, you know, he's, like, sour
for 30 minutes, and then the final 10 minutes, he does something that's sweet, and we're supposed to, like, forgive him, the characters are supposed to forgive him, but I don't care. Mm-hmm. There's never, like, any gradual build-up to it. They just hit you over the head with it, with a hammer, and expect you to, like, feel something. And then Barry had every right to be fed up with Ralph, and I was kind of surprised that the DM that we got about, you know, what Barry benching Ralph without consulting Iris. Because I guess I didn't see it that way, and I felt like they were all at that point upset with Ralph, so that, you know, it didn't really matter who said it. Like, Cisco could have said it, and everyone would be like, yeah, you're off the team. I'm kind of mad that he didn't be like, because Wally got kicked off the team. Ralph just got on the bench. And so, I honestly, like, when I was watching it, I tweeted, like, I really wanted, like, Barry to just knock him out. Like, it felt like he needed, like, a punch to the face, and I didn't get it. I also don't understand why Barry couldn't face the villain Null without Ralph. You know, they made this whole deal about Barry needing Ralph, you know, when he has two other perfectly functioning metahumans just standing around in Star Lab, just like Cisco and Caitlin, or, you know, like the animatronics at Chuck E. Cheese that only come on to perform when there's, like, kids watching them while they eat. And so, like, with Cisco and Caitlin, they just stop functioning when there's no one in Star Labs for them to, like, interact with. And so it's just kind of, like, weird. And the, like, most ridiculous thing is that when they were done, clearly done with the Breacher plot, instead of going to join the fight, they just stand there looking at the monitors while Barry, like, floats away into the atmosphere. And it's like, how is it going to take too long for, you know, one person that can breach between dimensions to get to a fight? Like, it was really weak line to sideline them out of the plot that they could have actually done something with. And I'm getting kind of tired of seeing, you know, them, like, standing around looking at monitors when they have powers and they could be using them. And then speaking of the side B plot, I didn't like it. I didn't dislike it, but it was just kind of boring to me, and it wasn't enough to save the episode. Like, side A was already so bad that I needed side B to be better than what it was. I like Danny Trejo as a grumpy old man. I thought he was cute. And seriously, like, I think that's, like, a thing where all the old men in the show just shout and angry talk all the time, because Harry does it as well. But I also think it was really ageist that he loses powers just because he's too old. Like, that doesn't really make sense to me. Like, his powers could be weaker, yes, but gone doesn't really make any sense. It's not, like, realistic. Like, powers don't have a shelf life. You don't just lose them because you get old. So that was another thing that was going against me for that side plot. You know, they could have had a better Breacher Cisco storyline. And then I feel for Cisco, like, not wanting to spend more time with Cynthia and wondering why she's always working, but, you know, he can breach too, so I don't know that it wasn't brought up that, you know, is he going to see her, because he's clearly not doing anything on the Flash right now, so he could have been going helping out on Earth 19. So I don't know.
You're right. I know it's so one-sided.
It seemed a little bit one-sided. Like, why isn't she coming to see me? Like, why aren't you going to see her? You know,
because you're not allowed to, remember? You're not allowed to breach in or out of Earth 19 unless you are a Breacher.
No.
So what Breacher is offering him is the job of doing that. Because it's kind of like they rule that fucking Earth, and no one else is allowed to do shit, and you're going to die if you do it. Because remember when he did go, he went to Earth 19 to grab her, and she was like, you need to get out of here before I have to fucking arrest you and have you killed.
Oh, yeah.
So that makes me less annoyed with that part of the situation. And I know it's mainly to set up for a Cisco scene down the road, probably going to be in episode 20 now. But, and, like, Cisco wasn't even concerned. Like, Breacher lost his power because he got old. So, and Cisco didn't even really seem concerned that this could be a possible future for me. If I get old, will I lose my powers? Like, that didn't even come into the side B plot. But basically, side B was just the setup for an episode that's coming further down the season, and had nothing to do with anything about anything.
Yeah, and this episode just had a big plot hole for me. Like, they have Melting Pot now, right? Like, couldn't they have just used him to take away Null's powers and put her away? I don't know. Anyway.
And it felt like that DeVoe in Marlies completely forgot about Melting Point because they only mentioned two or three metas, which was Null, the Folded Man that we have yet to see, and Weeper.
Mm-hmm. They don't have Melting Point. I guess they know where he is. I guess that's what it is. Like, they're not concerned because they know where he is, but that's weird. I don't know. It is weird.
I don't know. Anyway,
also, like, how the fuck does the team not, like, he could be useful? I don't know. I thought he had joined the team.
Wow.
Right. Like, I feel like there was just no progression from the last episode into this episode. It just felt like a one-off, and nothing made sense because they didn't use anything they'd had before, you know? Like, before, at least from episode to episode, they'd drop a line about what they're working on, and we know, and that's fine, you know? But here, that didn't happen at all, and I was bored for 95% of the episode. Like, bored out of my mind. And I'm also really offended on Barry's behalf that the show implied that Barry shouldn't be listened to by someone like Ralph, and that it's okay that Barry listened to a million and one people to get the job done, but Ralph can go off script and do whatever the fuck he wants, team and plans be damned. Like, no. No. And that's, like, that's how you want to play it, writers? All right, I guess, but, you know, just know that I'm pissed. And I was so annoyed that they had Iris prop Ralph all episode, especially since she failed to mention that Ralph only helped out in the past after being pep-talked for the zillionth time and was mean to her after she got her own powers. Like, the writers didn't have to do Iris like that because Ralph didn't deserve to be defended for his behavior at all. And also irritating was the fact that every conversation between Barry and Iris was about Ralph. It's like he was a stupid child they somehow had to parent because he couldn't get his shit together. And then they also made Barry sing Ralph's praises and tell him that he's a good hero and that the team is better with him. Fuck no! Why? Why would you say that? Ralph is a man-child. There's always somehow an excuse to justify the way he's acting. And after 17 episodes, we got his stupid-ass backstory about how his dad left. Did the writers expect me to be sad about that? Did they expect my sympathy? Because at this point, I have zero fucks to give about the sorry excuse for a man and human being. Ralph needs to go. I don't want to see one more episode focused on him, because when they do, everyone else has to prop him, and I hate it. We lose so much character development. We lose heartfelt moments because of him, and he's brought down season 4. He is the one constant issue on the show. His humor is juvenile, he's annoying, he can't take direction, and only decides to be a hero whenever he wants to be. Like, this is the same guy who couldn't be bothered to help Barry out by morphing into DeVoe just an episode ago, but had no problem turning into Joe, because, you know, apparently that just suited him just fine. Like, the Flash can have a sense of humor, but Ralph's 12-year-old boy behavior is not what I asked for. So I'm sorry, Hartley, you're great, but you better start looking for another job, because your character is the literal worst piece of trash that the Flash has ever seen. Anyway, aside from all the Ralph shit, I do wish the Cisco subplot could have been a bit more thoughtful. Like, now, like Jess said, you know, now that he's discovered he could lose his own powers when he gets older, what does he think about that? Is he sad? Will he try to do something about it so that it doesn't happen? Why do vibe powers are like the only ones that seem to go away when you get older? Because Jay didn't have an issue. He still has speed. So I don't know.
So he's a little slower, still has it.
Yeah, exactly. So that whole thing could have been nice to explore, because I think it would have emotionally resonated. And I also agree that it's frustrating we don't know what DeVoe's plan is yet. And going into episode 18, this, like, the Flash always tends to have pacing issues, but they really need to ramp up everything so that we can get the show on the damn road already. And no Ralph, no more Ralph. Finally, the Flash, I think, like they have a meta problem. They have to continue benching Cisco and Caitlin so that Ralph can shine. Barry is now the actual fastest man alive, and you're telling me that he constantly needs backup in the field when he didn't need any backup back then, when he actually wasn't the fastest man alive? Like, get the fuck out of here. I don't know. That makes no sense to me. Let Barry be a powerful meta that he's meant to be for the rest of the season, and for the love of everything under the sun, let him take down DeVoe himself and bring back Neil Sandilands as DeVoe. That is all. The end.
Bravo.
Predictions.
Well done. I almost forgot that you hadn't given your dislikes yet, because I thought that you already did in your recap. But they were beautiful.
Happier times. Predictions. Do we all think Ralph will die? Yes.
Yes. Ralph's gonna die. I didn't write down any predictions, but I guess I have lots of them. Like, we talked about the Killer Frost, you know, or younger Caitlin either flashback or hallucination. So I do think that perhaps in this next episode, DeVoe will take one of Caitlin's, like, maybe it's like he kills both Ralph and Caitlin, but since Caitlin has two people, he only takes one of them, is my guess. So then we'll have a Caitlin that is just Killer Frost, or more likely a Caitlin that is just Caitlin with Killer Frost dead, because we've seen Caitlin wandering around since then. And then I think that finally Caitlin will be like, Killer Frost deserves to be alive, so I would like to bring her back. This is unrelated, but clearly Dawn's name is Nora, and that is why everyone is fucking with us. And her brother's name is either Francis or Joseph. Hopefully Francis, after Francine, obviously, because I don't want Joe to be dead.
Francis, though? I don't know how I like that name.
You know what? Too bad, because it's either that or Joe. So, I guess it could be Henry, but then they're both named after Barry's parents, and that's not okay.
Yeah, that's true. What are your predictions, Jess?
Based on the next episode, the trailer, and saw the fight in Star Labs, it seems like it's going to be a good bet that DeVoe is going to try and round up Null. And maybe if they remember Melting Point, then they will also take him. And then I hope Ralph sacrifices himself to DeVoe. And then I'm not confident, like I've said this before, I'm not confident this is going to happen next week, but I do expect Marlise to be captured by Team Flash at some point. And then maybe they can discover that she's been manipulated and they can, like, repair the damage so she can actually be useful. Killer Frost will probably die. Like you said, I think, you know, DeVoe is going to kill one of them somehow, and it's going to be, like, Killer Frost will probably sacrifice herself to save Katie. And we'll just have regular old Caitlin back. So I don't really, if she does die, I don't really know what else is there for Caitlin to do at this point, because Killer Frost was the only thing that she had going on. Kill Killer Frost.
And even Killer Frost has barely been around this season in general, so I don't know.
Yeah. And if you kill her and then just bring her back, this just seems like repeating the same thing, because you don't really have any other storylines to do for it. So it would just, you know, if she dies, it would just be like, well, you know, I'll see her again in a couple episodes anyway, so it's not really even impactful.
Sort of like how Barry loses his powers once a season.
Yeah.
I'll see you again, Powers.
Ralph will die soon, as in, like, next week. And I don't, like Tati said, I don't like characters dying. I love fictional characters. They're, like, half my life. But you best believe I will be throwing a party and taking tequila shots to celebrate his long overdue demise. Good riddance. Thank you for your service, Ralph. I don't like
it. Thank you for your service.
No, thank you. Go away.
I would like to return this.
I would say that a prediction is if he doesn't actually die and he comes back later down the line, like in episode 23, for example. Let's theorize here. I just want him to go on his merry way. I do not want him back for season 5. I want him to be like, you know what? Being a private investigator is my calling. I need to go do good in the world and treat people well and learn how to have a moral compass. And then he will go off on his own.
And I will predict that. I do think he's not permanently dead. I'm sure they will find a way to save not just him, but some of the other metas too. Because you can't have fucking, like, 13 people that Barry failed to save over the course of the season. So yes, and then they will all go on their merry way, and we will never see them again. Goodbye. Yeah. Yes.
The only other thing about Harry, and because when I saw it, I was like, he better not be Thawne, because that's another, you know, that would be another storyline that they would have beaten us over the head with to death at this point about Thawne and Wells. And so maybe, and when she says it's been like 1,078 days since we last spoke, that actual number was the last time that, I think it was like, I forget what season it was, but it was called The Trap, and that was the last time that she literally talked to him.
Yes. Go back to season, 122, right?
120. Yeah. It was 120 was the last time that she talked to him.
The Trap was literally the last time that she talked to him. So that was the kind of feeling that they're going for, but I don't know, that maybe Harry is trying to imitate EOLs from season 1, because he's been trying to, like, think like Thawne, so maybe he's trying to act like Thawne to fool Gideon.
Gideon, yeah, I think that's what's happening, for sure.
Yeah.
Alright. Moving into our next recap, Arrow, which I wrote while I was watching the episode, so let's see how that goes. Oliver goes after Diaz on his own at the police department, scaring the fuck out of the lowly cops and kind of being a badass, not gonna lie. Back to killing, his manhunt for Diaz is on, but he's outnumbered. Then, shockingly, not shockingly, 10 hours earlier, Oliver and Felicity are listening to the news about Oliver's upcoming impeachment. Oliver is adamant about having rock-solid evidence against Diaz, and Felicity is on the case. She discovers Diaz is monitoring the cops with surveillance. Oliver wants to go after Diaz because he knows where he is every night, but Felicity, being the level-headed one, thinks that's a terrible idea because Oliver is only one man and cannot do that on his own. Felicity facilitates a reunion of sorts between Oliver and Diggle and parent traps them, but they're both stubborn and nothing gets resolved. Over at City Hall, Oliver is telling the lawyer that he was not obstructing justice by firing the DA and Captain Hill. The lawyer is reluctant to believe Oliver because he thinks Diaz is just a second-rate drug dealer who couldn't possibly orchestrate leverage against Hill and the DA. Like the father that he is, Quentin immediately realizes that Diaz is not the only thing Oliver is worried about, and Oliver opens up to him about John quitting the team. Quentin, proving that he continues being the best character on the show, tells Oliver that he's not the man he once was, that he's changed, and that he's now busting his ass every night trying to help the city. And being the optimist, Quentin tells Oliver that things will get better. Turns out the only evidence that Felicity found to help with the impeachment is directly linked to the council potentially finding out that Oliver is the Green Arrow. Oliver accuses Felicity of not doing her job because she was focusing on having him and Diggle reconcile. Then Oliver gets mad at William and throws something off the floor, and Felicity asks him to leave. Then she comes by the Arrow Cave to tell Oliver that maybe they should take some space, because this is not the man she married, and William deserves better, too. Then he gets visited by Quentin again. It's all reassurance from the former captain, and Oliver sadly asks him why everyone is leaving him, to which Quentin responds that some people just can't handle change. But Oliver really knows something's wrong when Prometheus shows up, since he's supposed to be dead on the island, and the two fight, and it's vicious, and the theme music for Prometheus is just so damn good. Also, he was the one best Arrow villain, okay? So that's all I have to say about that. Prometheus tells him there's only one way to stop him, and Oliver kills him. Adrian pops back up again like a fucking daisy to taunt Oliver, and that's when he realizes he's hallucinating. Oliver checks his blood to see if he's been dosed with something, and that's really smart. Adrian tells him that everything he touches dies, and that's Oliver's worst fears, which Adrian really knew how to get to the root of. Then Oliver discovers that he has vertigo coursing through his system, but he still has that meeting with the council. Then things get really interesting when Oliver hallucinates OG Laura Lance, young and full of light. The hallucination is from the day he left for the Gambit, and Laurel was still ignorant of his cheating ways. He goes through Laurel, he ends up seeing Laurel in the hospital, and Adrian is taunting him. So is NTA, and then the dragon appears at his apartment before Oliver is visited by his own worst enemy, himself. He's failed the city and lost sight of mission, and Green Arrow tells him that he knows what he needs to do. Making it to the preliminary impeachment hearing, he hands over the hard drive. Felicity, back from the science fair with William, finds out that Oliver is on his way to take down Diaz and takes off after him in her sneakers, armed with nothing but a cell phone and to save Oliver's impulsive ass. They escape, and later the vertigo finally leaves Oliver's system. Oliver agrees that he spread himself too thin, but that he needs to bring the mission back to basics and back to where he initially started, which was alone. So he basically has no team and even no Felicity working with him anymore. The council decides to impeach Oliver as mayor, and Quentin is now mayor for the time being. And that's what you missed on Arrow, which is probably my longest recap.
You know what? But I appreciate it because, like, you know, the reason why we do these recaps is just in case, like, people didn't watch all the shows. And I literally, like, I have to be honest, like, I was drunk when I watched Arrow. And I don't remember half of the episode at all. So, yeah. So
recaps are for Jessica.
Yes.
I feel like I should probably go back and actually, like, watch it again because, like, you know, right after Adrian Chase popped up, I must have just zoned out because I don't remember anything that happened after that.
Let me tell you, it was better than 10 times better than the Flash episode. So there's that. There's that. But what did we like? Tati, I guess you can go first.
I will read Tasha's likes because, like, I have nothing because I don't remember anything.
Well, I personally liked how subtly the hallucinations started, and how they were at first born of actions that Oliver himself had taken. So, like, when Felicity shows up, like, after he exploded in front of William, then Felicity shows up and, you know, leaves him or, like, takes off a ring or whatever. And you could think for a second that that was real and not a hallucination. But I also was proud of myself because when she was said, like, oh, you showed him the man that you really were, you really are, I was like, oh, no way would Felicity fucking say that. That is a hallucination. Goodbye. Thank you. So after that, it was much easier. But I thought that that scene was really well done and a good start to get the ball rolling, right? Like, once Prometheus shows up, then, you know, like, okay, well, obviously he's on drugs. But speaking of Felicity, I thought it was a really nice touch how she was the one that went in after him, and she's the one that reminded him, you know, that she's real and she's not going anywhere, because how it started, right, how it ends. Nice little bookends there. So, yeah, that was a really sweet scene, and probably their best scene all season. And she was very, you know, brave to do that. And I like the callback, and it's happened, like, lots of times, like, when he's, like, getting her out of there before everyone comes in. yeah, like, when he, like, you know, I don't know what you call it, but, you know, they go off together, right? He's done that lots of times, like, starting from season one, they've done that together. So I was like, that's a nice callback, I like that. Okay. Also, she deserved the kiss for all her efforts to help him this episode. She didn't get one, but, alright. Josh Shigar gave a great performance. I love him, because he is a great actor, and it gives Steven a lot to work with. So all their scenes were really intense and interesting. I'll have some things to say about them, the dislikes. But for the most part, I liked how he kept bringing up the idea of Oliver being his own worst enemy. Speaking of which, then we get to see actual Oliver from season one, right? Berating Oliver from season six about how far off the mark he is. Which is funny, because, like, on the one hand, you're like, LOL, that's kind of meta for the show. But on the other hand, you're like, all the things you're saying are the wrong things. Like, that's not why. That's not the actual reason why it's bad. So, you know, there's both sides of them. I also loved the Earth 1 Laurel hallucination, of course, broke my heart. I like that they do keep bringing in little moments that remind you that Laurel is someone that mattered to Oliver, even though he treated her like shit while she was alive, and so did the show. Quentin was wonderful this episode. I bring it up every single time, like, I can't believe that he was my least favorite character in season one, and now he is my favorite character. Like, I don't understand how this happened. But he's a great dad to everyone. I love him giving Oliver advice, having his back, bringing up how much he's grown for the better, you know? And also, again, like, it takes a really special kind of man, right? So, like, this is the dude that fucked up both your daughters' lives. And you're still here, you know, going to bat for him 6 years later. And, you know, taking pride in how he's grown since he fucked up your daughters' lives. Anyway, I can't wait to see him as mayor. So, yay.
The only thing that I could remember to like was Adrian Chase, because I was glad that he was back, and I thought that he was, I do agree with you that he is one of, if not the best Arrow villain, so it was nice to have him incorporated. And then the rest of these are going to be Tasha's, like, I feel like I should really watch this episode now, and I'll stop drinking through Arrow. Tasha, she said that Steven actually gave an interview hyping up this episode, and usually when he hypes something, it is actually good, so he's a good barometer for what to tune in for.
Hyped it up at AwesomeCon as well.
Yeah, so, you know, you could already tell that, you know, this is going to be a good episode, and I kind of wish I didn't miss it now. for her likes, she likes Adrian Chase as well, and felt that a lot of his hallucinations were saying the same thing that fans have been saying about what's been wrong with the show, so that was good. Quentin and Oliver scenes, she also loves their pseudo father-son dynamic. Oliver being sassy with Diggle when they tried to make up, she thought Steven, this is one of his strongest acting episodes. The why does everybody leave me, and I don't know how to tell if you're real, were especially powerful moments for her. Felicity and William continues to be a highlight for her. Their relationship is very endearing. Felicity in general. And then she likes all the callbacks to the earlier seasons. For example, the way Oliver killed Chase in the bunker with throwbacks to the pilot. So there's a lot of nostalgia there. There's a lot of different things that she mentioned. And then lastly, spending time in Oliver's headspace. I guess that's what the Oliver talk to Oliver scene was really great. And some people might call this a filler episode, but after all the changes Oliver's had as a character,
it was necessary for him to recalibrate, and that we got to see that.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that, actually. I mean, I love Trippy Mind episodes so much, and I'm currently discovering that I enjoy it a lot more when Oliver is left to his own devices, because he's always felt like a solo person to me, so I think he does well when he's on his own, when he's somewhat isolated in a way, I guess. And I like that the hallucinations felt real, and at first I didn't realize they were, some of them were hallucinations until, like, later on they were punctuated with like, 3 or 4 taps before the arrival of the next person. I thought that was really well done. And after this season of bad villains, we've had 2 so far, I was so happy to see Prometheus and Josh Segarra knocked it out of the park. Adrian Chase was the type of villain who knew how to get to the core of Oliver's fears and insecurities, and it really works here. And I like that Oliver is essentially visited by his, you know, his inner demons coming to life, all taking forms of those he loves. But I also really like that Quentin seemed to be the only person who was real the whole time and kept Oliver in check throughout the episode. Their relationship, like Tati said, has evolved so much, and it was really on display here. I like that Felicity at least attempted to get Diggle and Oliver to talk, even though it backfired, but it was cute that she also took William to the science fair and then turned around to go rescue Oliver for doing something that would get him killed, all by herself, no backup, taking her little sneakers and running, which was really cute. And I did like the scene between her and Oliver in inside the building before he went after the dragon, because I thought that was one of their strongest moments since I can't even remember when. And I like that Katie Cassidy was able to portray the differences in, like, the pre-boat version of Laurel and then, the warped version of her later. I did like that even though he was being blamed for, quote-unquote, letting Laurel be Black Canary by Prometheus, Oliver conceded that Laurel would have done whatever she wanted to do anyway, which is true because only she is the boss of herself. Finally, I thought it was smart to lay the breadcrumbs for Oliver ultimately probably revealing himself to the city as Green Arrow. Like, handing over the evidence is just the first step, and I feel like that storyline is actually going somewhere now. But what do we not like?
Oh, first, I forgot to say that I did love Felicity and William's little dynamic. I think that they're great, and I'm glad that William has a stable parental figure in his life. Now, on to what I don't like. It's sort of like a backhanded compliment, I guess, but, like, Adrian in this episode was great, and, like, seeing him playing off of Oliver was great, but it's kind of sad how having him there as a hallucination just underscores how shit your current villain is, right? Like, a fake Adrian Chase taunting Oliver about past seasons is better than whatever the fuck Ricardo Diaz, whose name I just forgot, is doing right now. Speaking of which, I have to agree, I agree with what you will say in the future, that I don't understand or care about Diaz. Like, when the council was like, who is this guy? Like, we don't even know him. I was like, yeah, exactly. We don't know him. What has he done? Nothing. And Oliver's like, because he's so good at it. He's so good at it that you don't even know that he's doing it. And I'm like, is that how TV should be, though? He's so good at it that I don't even know what is happening? No, I don't care. This is bad. Also, I didn't like I liked seeing Earth 1, you know, early season Laurel, but then I didn't like the whole little hallucination bit where it's like, oh, you're the reason that Laurel's dead because you let her become Black Canary and she didn't have enough training. Like, you thought a couple of self-defense classes was going to be enough. Like, LOL. And I was like, this is bullshit. First off, it's not up to Oliver, right? He couldn't have controlled her. She wanted to become Black Canary. And second off, like, it's twofold. Because on one hand, like, she had more than just, you know, a couple of self-defense classes. She was holding her own back in season 1 when she didn't know shit. She was still fighting people because that's how much training she'd had. And then in season 3/4, she got trained by Nyssa as well. So she could stand up to it. And, like, any of those people, if Dark had wanted to kill them at that moment, would have died. Because they were all helpless in that moment. So she did not die because of any lack of training, and she didn't die because Oliver let her become Black Canary. So I fucking hated that. I saw a couple of fans, like, taking pride in that moment, because it's like, oh, it's like the writers listen to our arguments and are just spouting back on the right page, and it is like that. It's like if I were watching The Flash, and The Flash suddenly was like, let me take everything that Iris haters say and make it part of the show, you know? And that's why Arrow can never be my show, because I am not part of the fan base that the show caters to. The show has the complete opposite perspective from me, which makes it very hard for me to enjoy, even in a good episode like this one. The idea that Oliver listens to his hallucinations is a pet peeve of mine. Because I was like, what? Like, why is Oliver suddenly like, oh, yeah, you know what? My crazy town makes sense. I should do that. So, like, he's like, season one Oliver's real mad at me. I guess I gotta do this alone. Like, I understand what Tasha was saying about it. That it's kind of like, it's showing growth because he's like, has a problem and it needs to be fixed. And he's like, working on fixing it alone. But, like, it feels kind of forced to me. It's not, you know, it's just the kind of stuff that always gets taken. Like, oh, I have to do this alone. Until the finale when I realize that the friends we made along the way is how I'm going to solve the problem. So, you know that's going to happen. He's not going to solve it alone. He's going to use the friends he made along the way. So, that was unnecessary. And also, he did fire Felicity. He's like, I'm not firing you, but he did fire her. And so I hope that she gets to make her company now with Curtis, because she doesn't got anything else going on. That's all.
Which is weird, because him firing her just screams that she's just his employee, too. Like, you can't fire me. I'm your fucking wife. I'm still going to show up to the stupid-ass Arrow Cave anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I own this Arrow Cave.
Right.
It's awesome. Like, I own 50% of the Arrow Cave. Well, Tasha, because Tasha is me this week, because I don't remember enough to know what I didn't like. I didn't even know New Team Arrow was in this episode. That's how much I liked. She doesn't like Diaz either. She thinks he's a dull villain, and the presence of Promethea served to shine a giant glowing arrow signal into the sky, just how weak Diaz is. She's not a fan of Oliver losing his jobs. One of her biggest gripes about season three was that without a day job, Oliver was always in the bunker and he lacked balance and being that being the CEO had given him. So she likes that he had this mayor plot outside of Arrow, and now he doesn't even have that anymore. Because she feels like it might just go back to him just being brooding by himself for a while. And she doesn't think it'll get that bad because he does have a family now, but she would still prefer him having a purpose outside of just being the Arrow. And then finally, I didn't even know race was in this episode, but there's apparently a race of death scene that she did not appreciate. And
I didn't appreciate that either.
Because race is like the last tie between Oliver and Oliver has to his childhood, and when William can't lose another person, so don't play with our emotions, writers. Do not kill race off.
Yeah, aww. I mean, first of all, I'm so glad Tati went off on her rant, her Laurel rant, because I completely agree with that aspect, because I did feel like the writers were trying to say something, and I didn't like that, but she was just much more passionate about it than me, in the way that she told you all. Anyway, I just like the fact that it's still unclear exactly how Dragon rose to power in Star City. Like, he wants it destroyed so he can rule over it. Is his ultimate goal to simply create chaos and watch everyone suffer? Will he be the city's drug lord and run everything in corruption? I don't know. But he still doesn't, like, compel me. And the deep voice he does while talking still grates on my last nerve. I'm like, what is he trying to do? I don't understand why his voice sounds like this. Because in the first half of the season, it didn't. And I don't understand. I dislike the hallucination with Prometheus, where, like Tati said, he was blaming Oliver for Laurel becoming Black Canary, and I was like, excuse me, she was perfectly capable of making her own damn decisions and doing whatever the fuck made her happy. So, that's that. Nitpick, I don't remember exactly what was said in the scene, but I didn't like that Felicity was reminding Raisa that she's a long way from home when it came to something she'd mentioned. I don't even know what Raisa was talking about, but it just irritated me because I felt like it was a pointed comment, and I don't know why. It just rubbed me the wrong way. This is not a dislike, but it was really obvious that Rick Gonzalez wasn't playing Renee in that hospital hallucination scene because he was masked, so I guess the actor had another project or something. But you could tell, it was obvious. And seeing seeing Prometheus again basically reminded me why this season's villains suck. And that's really sad. Because, like Tati said, in one episode, he turned everything around. Like, you understand why... What's his face? Whose name I can't remember from the first half.
Caden James?
Yes!
Yeah, James.
Caden James and now Dragon are terrible villains. Because we don't... I mean, they're just kind of there. There's nothing going... There was never anything going on with them. And now Dragon's just... He's kind of like at a stalemate. It's like, I don't know. I don't know what's happening. But so that plot does need to move. I do realize that they had no place in this episode, but I did feel the lack of NTA. So that's something. Because I feel like I've grown so accustomed to seeing them that not having them made me kind of sad. But
I also forgot that Caden James existed until you just said that you forgot him.
You forgot his existence, I forgot his name. Clearly he's not a compelling person. But what are our predictions going into the next episode?
I will say that even though I clearly did not watch this episode the way I thought I did, I do like that it is being set up for Oliver to out himself as the Green Arrow, so he can be publicly the Green Arrow in season 7. Because I feel like the one thing that's been lacking for me this whole OTA, NTA fight and all this kind of stuff was Oliver just being, like, saying that I did this stuff and I will be accountable for it. So I feel like this is the first step towards him being accountable with the city and saying, like, I did do this stuff. I am the Green Arrow. And then they can move on and he can stop, like, hiding in the shadows and this whole, like, vigilante kind of mess. So I do like that. And I guess it's, you know, finally in the finale, he's going to out himself as the Green Arrow and then possibly go to jail over hiatus. Yep. And then
have a second trial where the people are like, you're so cool and you saved us so many times, you go free.
Exactly. Or like the villain is like so bad that the people are like, get him out of jail, we need the Green Arrow.
The people come back and be like, you have saved this city.
There you go.
That's gonna be the final, when he gets sentenced, like the judge is gonna be like, Oliver Queen, you have failed this city. Tasha's prediction. She stands by her theory that Quentin is dying.
I actually felt like that too, Tasha, this episode, because he was just so good and wholesome and was helping Oliver, and I'm worried now for his future. I really am.
Yeah, his becoming mayor was like the final nail in his coffin. Because like just about every mayor has like died at this point. Plus, he is now that much closer to Diaz's operation, so he's in the danger zone. And then, secondly, she predicts that she'll be bored to tears because the next episode is villain-centric, which means a lot of Diaz, probably a lot of Laurel. The dragon hiding behind a bunch of cops makes him seem more like a garden snake, and she's not intimidated. And let's see.
Tasha, you can't see Tati right now, but she was freaking out over Quinn potentially dying.
I am. Silent freak out over Quentin. I feel too good. I don't want it. Take Henderson. Leave Quentin.
No! Take Ralph 20 times over. Leave everybody else.
Take Ralph.
Yeah, don't Henderson. Tati, how dare you?
Ralph's gonna die anyway.
Well, I think Tasha's final point was that she really wants to get that Felicity Curtis hybrid company off the ground and running. Yeah.
I hope we see that too, because that's gone nowhere. So, side B, Lady with Gumption nominations. Who do we pick? I don't think anybody from The Flash qualifies this week.
Sadly, there was... Oh, well, you know what? I don't know. I might nominate Marlies.
Oh.
For trying to break out of that cycle.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, good one.
Sorry, go ahead.
Remember, sorry, like, as I've said multiple times, I was drunk during Arrow, so I don't know what went on, but I'm sure Felicity had a lot. It sounded like she had a lot to do.
Yeah, Felicity, yes. I would nominate Felicity as well. Yes, that's my Arrow nominee.
I agree, because she...
So she went in there to get her man. She did not care.
Her sneakers had like these little pearl ties. I don't know what was going on with them, but it made me laugh because like William just handed them to her and she's like, oh yes, thank you, because she was wearing heels. She took them off. She ran all the way to police station to stop her dumbass husband from trying to get himself killed all by herself. And she gave him a nice little speech and then he whisked her away. And she did that all by herself without any weapons or anything, no backup. And I thought that was really brave of her, so.
That sounds kind of like Felicity for side B, is what we're going
with. Yeah, I think Felicity can take side B. Yeah, it was a happier ending than Marlise's anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marlise was just sad.
I want her to break free.
I know. All right, so we have Felicity for side B, and for side A, we had Jennifer. Jennifer and Felicity, who is our top choice?
Oh my. I mean, y'all know that I want to say it's Jennifer.
Me too. Well, first because she's never won a Lady with Gumption round before, and I think that she saved her dad's life, like, with her power she didn't want to use. So that's impressive. And she also stood her ground with her ex, who was awful to her, but she didn't immediately want to get back together with him either. She was smart, you know? So there was just a lot going on for Jennifer, and I think that she faced it with intelligence and bravery.
And there's been a lot going against her narratively, I feel, you know? And now it's her time to shine, so I want to give it to her. Jessica, thoughts? I was going to say, you can't have that. You don't know the other one.
Because I can't be objective about it. I'm sure Felicity had this probably, it sounded like it was a strong episode, one of the strongest she's had in a while.
Yeah.
But I didn't see it.
Definitely her strongest since the Helix week.
Yeah, I agree.
So yeah, I think it is, you know, both ladies did really great, but I would favor Jennifer.
All in favor of Jennifer, say aye.
Aye.
Hi.
All right. Jennifer. Jennifer Pierce is our Lady with Gumption of the Week for episode 31. Thank you again for joining us. This wraps up our podcast. We will see you again next week where Supergirl returns in place of Legends until June 19, I think. So Supergirl's back next week and we will be back next week. So see you later.
Bye. Bye.